and I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the end of year 2016 Skinnaughan podcast.
This year's over.
It is almost over, and it has been quite a memorable year in many, many ways.
Yeah, but
most of them great. Right?
Well, I'm reminded of James Blunt's tweet.
If you thought 2016 was bad, 2017 we're releasing more Scan On podcasts.
Way to shoot us while we're down, man.
I miss Scan On podcasts.
Me too.
It has been far too long.
It has.
We've lost so many famous people since the last one.
But we didn't do it, honest. Yeah.
Big love to all of them. Because there's too many to mention.
There are far too many to mention.
Make four of those if you started the podcast. And also
basic decency. Yeah.
And also, I'm spreading the phrase big love to the list of deceased.
As part of our end of year one, we're going to review the year in terms of we're going to name our top 10 films of the year. A piece, and we're also going to name which one of them we thought was the worst film of 2016.
Oh, God.
Just one, so we're not here all night.
Yeah.
It's been that kind of a year, people.
It has, actually. And yeah, we had a bit of discussion about this, and I think everybody's compiling their list, there's been a lot of division this year in terms of what people think are the best and the worst films. Like, I think that there's a lot of contention out there, and that even amongst ourselves, we're idly speculating. We haven't seen each other's lists. We're idly speculating that there may be between 30 and 35 different films among the 40 films that we name.
Yeah.
So the possibility of only 5 or 10 common films is remarkable.
We've been punching each other outside because of it.
The only thing we can say with absolute certainty is that Batman v Superman will not appear in any of the top 10.
Oh, that's
so
what
keep
you
your
think.
Eyes open. Keep your eyes open for Suicide Squad then, yeah?
I didn't say anything about the Ultimate Edition, Niall.
The Ultimate Edition is not shown in cinemas and therefore is not eligible.
We have a special screening at the Lighthouse.
Listen to you
I
with
checked
your
this
rules.
Thing.
What are you, the Academy?
Don't worry, the people at O.J. Simpson Made in America will, though.
Oh, good.
One of
the films
do not count either, which is why festival films are not eligible.
Ah. Uh-huh. Starting crumbling up this <list. laughs> I really should have thought this was good.
Damn you, Niall. All right, then. Batman v Superman may be appearing on my list. Curses. Fooey. Boiled again.
Fooey. What are we, in a Hanna-Barbera cartoon now?
This is a PG-13 podcast. No, it's not.
We're going to start with honorable mentions before we get into the top 10. So anyone that just about failed to make it, but you think is still worthy of discussion. So we'll start with Darren.
Okay. Lots of them, to be fair. I think it's been like, lots of people have been claiming this has been a terrible year. I think there's been a lot of good films, but very few great films. But we'll circle around to that. In terms of films that I like that didn't quite make the top 10, and I suspect we'll be talking about a lot of them, Kubo and the Two Strings is probably the best animated film of the year, I think. Stuff like Star Trek Beyond is probably the best blockbuster of the year. The Edge of 17 is really, really good, if anybody's seen it.
It's the teen comedy with Hayley Steinfeld.
Yes, it is.
It's very recent, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very much, it's the most recent film on my shortlist by a considerable margin. And then there's, the Neon Demon, which nobody else here likes. So I feel obliged to mention it.
For many reasons.
It's ref, and so it's visually stunning and visually stunning. Keep in mind, I'm somebody who thinks that Only God Forgives is a masterpiece.
Oh, yes, you're him.
I'm the one person. It's an operatic masterpiece. It is an operatic masterpiece.
It is not.
It's a lot of things.
It is a lot of things. It's not that.
There can be a masterpiece in badness as well. You know, something so bad that it's a masterpiece. Like the
but more on Suicide Squad later.
I don't think Only God Forgives us that, but we're not discussing
that. Yeah, I could get bogged down in that, and I'm not going to do it.
That'll be a podcast extra.
Cool, and then... otherwise, just some other nice films like Everybody Wants Some, Midnight Special. Great period. There was actually a great period before the summer. There was a nice stretch of good films coming into the summer, I think. That
period we do not mention. The summer.
Yes.
The summer.
The light it burns. But yeah, so stuff like, say, Everybody Wants Some, Midnight Special, I also really enjoyed. The Nice Guy. High Rise and Bone Tomahawk, I liked. Bone Tomahawk,
I
enjoyed.
Bone Tomahawk. I don't think it would have made, say, my top 20, but I did enjoy it.
I love Bone Tomahawk, but we'll probably talk about more about that later. So that's my crazy list down the way. What about yourself?
My crazy list. Well, like you said, there was a lot of good stuff early on in the year, and then later in the year, but don't even mention the summer. It was the worst in my living memory. My goodness me. But There were just some gems that were still in here and there. So you mentioned things like Bone Tomahawk. I would add, say for example, the Coen Brothers Hailed Caesar, which just had me in stitches. I think it had all in stitches, to be honest.
Yep. And we have the best comedic scene of the year, I think, with the...
What did it was, is it?
Yes.
Tripping.
Almost every scene can name Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
True. One scene. But... Okay, two. What else? I also enjoyed Bigger Splash again with Ralph Fiennes, also with Tilda Swinton.
I like the fact that Grand Budapest Hotel seems to have like uncovered Ralph Fiennes.
Oh, Ralph Fiennes comedian.
I would argue in Bruges did that. But,
fair point.
True.
Actually,
yeah, which is
you
very.
Take
you're an inanimate object.
Yes, and
this is not a PG-13 podcast.
You're a fucking inanimate object.
You take back what you said about my cunt fucking kids.
I take back what I said about your cunt fucking kids.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Phil. It's very important that we get that out of the way here.
also in the comedy range, Love and Friendship, which I really enjoyed, with Stillman's adaptation of Jane Austen. The funniest Jane Austen adaptation I can think of. It's quite something. Really enjoyed it.
It's no Bride and Prejudice and Zombies.
No.
That's a
no,
good
it's not.
Thing.
I mean, you can eat that there.
There's also I enjoyed a lot of some darker fare this year. There was Nocturnal Animals with Amy Adams.
Which
Jake
I
Gyllenhaal.
Liked a lot.
That is an fascinating film.
Beautiful film.
Also, Seamus McGarvey, you can't read.
Great work of that.
Absolutely
great
astonishing
work.
To look
it
at.
Is.
And it's got some bite afterwards, I tell you. Also, this was an astonishing year for documentary. I enjoyed the likes of The Pearl Button, One More Time with Feeling, The Nick Cave, and The Bad Seed Speaking
I'm
of.
Still
it's packs quite a punch. Wiener, which I'm sure will play very differently now, post.
Well,
you know.
So it's his involvement in the election.
Yes,
well.
Yes indeed.
That that's a very, very good document.
I like it. Yeah, I like it.
And also Francophonia, Alexander Sokurov's homage to the Louvre and everything within it. And
Hitchcock Truffaut was also out this year. We're talking about documentaries.
That's right.
Good.
Which one?
Hitchcock Truffaut. It's basically
a
companion book.
It's
very nice.
Yeah.
But it's a companion piece, basically.
But those are some of the ones I particularly enjoyed.
Jason?
Yeah, I could echo some of the ones I mentioned. Francophonia is just outside my top 10. I really liked it. Love and Friendship the same. Mm-hmm. My favourite, I'm not really a blockbuster type in general, but I like Jungle Book. I really liked it. I thought it was a very good make. That's one of the best CGI I've seen in.
And the scene where Christopher Walken sings "I Want to Be Like You,"
it's great.
It's
good. It's a really good film. I was surprised at how good it was
for Jon Favreau.
No one's really doing it. Can put our things together. I
pretty much
good.
The cornerstone of like because we had Cinderella beforehand and stuff like that, but I think this is the reason why we're now getting a live action Aladdin.
Well,
like,
Maleficent made a small fortune.
Yeah, but this has got a critical.
And it's a straight up adaptation as opposed to a deconstruction or examination.
So that and Pete's Dragon together, that means Disney are onto another.
Pete's Dragon didn't do too well financially.
It got a lot of critical traction.
It did.
I would add Pete's Dragon, which I really enjoyed, but didn't make my top 20. I like High Rise as well. I know Philip wasn't a big fan. Room still hanging about there, even though it seems like it was released about 5 years ago.
It does.
And Joys of Oscar season.
I mentioned another documentary, Mattress Men, which just outside my top 10, which I really enjoy.
Mattress
Men. And Ghostbusters, we won't get into that because I'm the only one, but Darren possibly, who likes it. Philip and Niall, Sebastian and Niall really doesn't like it.
Yeah,
but I really like it. And made my top 20. In the context of a year, I think the whole argument they have to dig a little deeper for good films and they're always there.
I don't think it's true.
May or may well not be true, but I found this year not the greatest year ever, personally. But that's just me. I mean,
okay, fair enough.
And we had conversations about like how many and rate at X amount of stars, and generally I look back over the last few years my top 20 films, and nothing is below 4 stars. This year there's a few. And
when was the last time you gave 5 stars, Jay?
2013.
Just to give a sense of scale.
2013.
Alright. I would argue that, I don't rate films on a star scale myself, but I think that, I think that you need to have a couple of years' distance before you rate films.
But I think we're about June.
But I'm talking 4.5 star, four and a half star, which generally would sit there, and we need our shade up or shade down, depending on the time, and there's not much of that for me. But, it's other people disagree with that, but for me, it was just, I don't think it's the greatest year.
I thought it was very good if you exclude the 3 months of the summer.
I wish we could, but...
Would it be...
Would that it were so simple.
Trippingly.
But no, because I did the break. I had a list. I started with a list of 30 films, and I broke them down. And the most of them were between. And in fact, most of my top 10 is barring one film, all before May. And six of them come from March, or four of them come from March.
Like. It's just that's you got to 30. I could barely make 20.
Really?
For a definitive.
I got about 23 or 24 that I and. The ones at 23 could have been at 18 in relative terms. Yeah. They were all.
It's also a big mush.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that I am one of those people you were talking about there who thinks that if you looked outside a little bit outside the conventional sphere this year, you found good stuff.
You find that every year if you really kind of search. I felt I had to search harder this year than I've had in quite some time. And
you got
says.
To the good stuff.
But even like, yeah, we'll get into top 10s and top 5s wherever later. But even at that level, there's only two or three that would. Maybe stand with previous years, and that's kind of where I pitch it.
Okay.
What about a couple of animated ones? I'm going to add Zootropolis and Only Yesterday, which were both very enjoyable.
I didn't see Only Yesterday, but I liked Zootropolis.
Yeah,
I agree with the Jungle Book, but it didn't quite make it. I want to add a comedy in Pop Star Never Stop Popping.
Yes,
I've heard good stuff.
I like those
guys. The Lonely
that's
Island.
Sitting at number 25 on my list. Yeah,
that's on my to do or to watch list.
I'm
that
so
I,
humble.
I have
Humble is the most brilliant pop song ever.
Yeah, I'm so sorry I didn't see that because I watched the trailer and right at the end, Martin Sheen! Why didn't I know this? He's in it! I must see it!
He's... Okay, you might want to temper your Martin Sheen expectations there.
Yeah. I don't care, he punches the guy. I want to see that!
I will get to that. It did get to my list, but I just couldn't get to
it. I loved the first half of Popstar. I think it became it weakened a bit when it became more conventional.
It did.
But the first half is full of brilliant, like, great guys. Like, the idea of...
The songs are great as well. And they're eligible for Oscars, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, fingers crossed.
Well, I mean, to be fair, so
hey,
South Park
can do it.
That's it. South Park was able to win, wasn't it?
Ben Canada,
the one performed by Robin Williams.
I really wanted Uncle Fucker to be nominated, but hey.
Alas.
Shut your fucking face.
I'm going to add a couple of foreign ones as well.
What?
In Victoria and Rams.
I've heard great things about Victoria and I still haven't seen it, but that's the one-take German film.
Yes, and Rams is an Icelandic comedy
about
sheep
farmers. Yeah, that was on my list to see and I didn't get to it, unfortunately.
Yeah. And Goodnight Mommy, then, as well. For Ron Dan,
which I think about that as well.
Yeah. So, then, closer to home, Anthropoid, which starred the British Killian Murphy.
I quite enjoyed that, I have to say.
Which is, it's a very well-made, old-school horror movie.
So very few surprises in it, but
Killian Murphy,
very
Nazi
good.
Hunter. I'm up for that.
Yeah.
Room is just outside my top 10 as well. Then Creed from the start here, which I love.
Creed is.
Everybody, I think,
is
Creed. Creed.
I'm not a serial killer, which is.
I haven't seen that yet. I really want to see
that. Was fun.
I really want that.
And then documentary, The Land of the Enlightenment.
Ooh.
Which is set in Afghanistan. It is really, really interesting. So it's an Irish film production.
Very good.
It was actually a great year for Irish film in terms of we being an Irish film podcast. We're going
to
get to that in a moment.
I expect at least two people in this room are going to have very Irish oriented lists. Call it a bunch.
Right.
You tease.
With that, we'll move into the top 10.
It's like poker, but everybody wins.
This is like when we used to record the old podcast. Remember when we used to get into the top 10, the excitement that would surround us?
No.
And then slowly giving way to dread and anxiety and mutual contempt. I'm worried this is going to end up...
in the fetal position.
Yeah, I'm worried this is going to end up like a two-hour cut of the bear scene from The Revenant.
But before we get into that top 10, we're going to go with the year's top 10 in terms of the box office.
Now, this is more like the old school.
Oh, here we go, let's roll.
Watch, I'm getting my eyes ready to roll.
Yes. It has been a very odd year in terms of the box office.
You say that only in terms of the box office. Everything else outside the box office
has
outside
been a
the
great
film,
year.
It really has. You know, they're apparently adding a leap second to the year, so 2016 will be 1 second longer.
Finally.
Yeah.
Just what we wanted.
I'm about to say, you say this as if 2017 is going to be any better.
Well, I don't think so.
Well, it starts off with that lad being sworn into office, so that's a bad start.
You're all assuming that. I'm still waiting for this generation's Lee Harvey Oswald to appear.
Right. So
that's going to get an end.
At number 10 making the most film money this year, and this is
the Irish box office
films that were released this year in the Irish box office. Right. So Star Wars made $2.5 million but isn't eligible because it's a 2015 movie. So Trolls.
The animated one.
Starring Justin Timberlake and Anna Kendrick.
Yes.
Cool.
That's the whole thing I remember about it, because their names are on all the posters.
2016, the year of trolls.
Indeed.
Indeed. Yeah. Can't argue with that.
Made just over 2 million at the box office.
Animation, eh?
2.1 million.
We've been saying this for years.
Yeah. In 8 weeks, it's spent in the top 10.
Wow.
You say that as if, like, Andrew Ruse's Christmas special isn't going to be number 7 here.
I do say that, but it is a bit of confidence, actually.
Quite scary.
Although I wouldn't be 100% that.
Quite scary how much money Andrew.
Oh, it's terrifying.
If you do you
rue it?
If you were to do it by opening weekend, it's actually like scary.
let's not do that. For Jay's sake.
For Hollow's sake.
At 9, Captain America Civil War.
I'm surprised that's not higher, to be honest.
Yeah, I am surprised it's not higher.
I didn't like that until I liked it. It took a while, though.
It's an hour
like it.
Of setting up bureaucracy and complicated
philosophical debates. It's exhausting before it gets
and to then people punch each other and joke about it.
Right, but considering that the last Captain America was the closest the Marvel Universe is going to get to a tribute to all the president's men, you shouldn't really be that surprised as, you know, a certain amount of bureaucracy creeping in.
No, it is. But it then goes to this incredibly wry, ironic place of, oh, we're still friends, depends on how hard you hit me.
Oh, no. If Joss Whedon is involved, I do not want to hear about your sardonyx or irony. No.
2016 is the year irony died. It's the year satire died.
I thought I'd be happier about this.
South Park, the last episode of South Park, does a really good thing about what is not satire.
Yeah. The real world is feeling increasingly like.
At 8, Deadpool.
Ugh.
Where do you end?
I didn't mind Deadpool. I think
it's grand.
It's like the first hour of it's fine and funny.
And it only lasts another 2 or 3 minutes after that,
which is a good one for Jay. Yeah, I guess bonus points for 90 minutes. Always good, as everybody does.
Subversive as it takes.
No. In fact, it gives it all up.
Yeah.
That the credit earns. But. While it's earning it.
And I love the opening credits as well. And I think Reynolds
is great.
Reynolds is great. It feels like he's finally...
No, I think he's I think
and he got nominated for a Golden Globe.
Well, hey, at least it's not The Tourist.
Indeed.
It is that. Act 7, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Didn't see it.
I'm surprised that's not higher, too.
It's only 4 weeks late.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll probably climb.
Yeah. But hey,
it's Harry box Potter magic.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, that's it. It's very enjoyable. As someone who loves the Harry Potter universe,
I thought everybody had to love the Harry Potter universe.
No. There's a sizable backlash.
Oh, good. I don't care.
All right then.
At 6, Suicide Squad.
Finally, a quality film.
The funny thing is, all the people who were disappointed in Batman vs Superman, the big fans going, but Suicide Squad will be the one, it'll be the one to get DC back on track.
Because Lord knows David Ayer is a director with a consistent track record.
To be honest, so from what I've heard, I haven't seen it.
And beyond move on, look, now it's going to be Wonder Woman, it's one director. No.
Yeah.
Is it his fault? Kind of hacked
it.
Yeah,
you can tell watching the film it's been hacked to pieces.
Wasn't there a big reshoot? It was reshot,
and there were rumours that they brought in the company that did the trailer, which is always a good sign when the director is asked to step outside.
Quite late.
They wanted to make it more funny.
They wanted to be like Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, was the message, the memo that was sent.
Yuck.
Because Lord knows Batman vs Superman was too serious. So,
well, in a way.
Logically.
Just, you know, I've an idea, lads. Why don't you just try and make it good?
Came out in the last 2 days is that not only is David Ayer returning to the
Sucker for Punishment,
but he's making one based just on the female villain characters into the DC universe. Right, so
nobody.
Oh, right, Sirens, is it?
Yeah, which was just announced yesterday, and also,
and that's warning sirens that you hear in the background.
But they announced another one yesterday as well, which is some other sort of spin-off as well. So just it seems that they're just making it up as they go along.
Oh, they are.
They just want spin-offs.
Marvel have this over.
Whatever about what you think of it, they know what they're doing. Yeah. Even if you don't like what they're doing, they know what they're doing.
But on the other hand, I think the problem with, say, the Marvel model is that it is too segmented and it is too rigorous and it is too things cannot change.
Though.
It's episodic, and there can be no change or development.
But it's still kind of in like it's fine though because it. at least when you go in, it's a coherent movie. I mean, for me, at this level, if nothing else, surely that's what we should get for.
Is the sign of a successful franchise not that you do get the episode?
I think it is. I think
like
it is.
Fast and the Furious or James Bond.
I would argue that, for example, the recent Planet of the Apes reboots are among the better franchise films of the past 5 years because they actually change.
I'm not a particular big fan of them.
Because there's a significant evolution between the two films. And
an evolution, you say?
Yeah, see what I did there?
He's just aping your stuff.
I'm talking about financial.
There's no time
successful.
For no monkey here. No monkey business.
I'm talking about financially successful and sustainable.
Right.
And it is sustained. Marvel. So, like, I mean, this is it. And look how far they're blueprinted ahead as well. You know,
yeah.
At 5, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice.
I finally watched this about 6 months after the fact.
It is not the worst film ever.
Jeremy's Iron. I'll tell you that much.
It's a movie, it has no sense of irony, and I like that. In 2016, I like having a blockbuster with no sense of irony.
Yes. Yeah.
But it just... But
you have a character who's morally good, right?
Yes.
But he's been subverted.
What, Batman?
No, Superman. No, the whole point is that Superman is too good for this sinful world.
No, but if you're talking about...
He's like the Randian objectivist superhero who's like the man who can bend the world to his will if those stupid bureaucrats get out of his way, which is...
The absence of irony is fine in a film if you make the moral center of it an actual moral center.
He is the actual moral center.
He's too dull for that. I hate Superman. He's an alien who can't be killed. Why should I care?
I think that in 2016, a film about a billionaire who conspires to destroy the legacy of an immigrant or as a descendant of immigrants is a very potent film.
Too potent.
I think you're given a... That filmmaker far too much
I can't even say his name.
I think you're giving him far too much credit.
I think a film about a billionaire who inherited his fortune, who was driven by
racist
anxiety.
He looked at it and saw, Batman's wings look cool, and made the fucking film. That's what I think.
All right.
At 4, The Jungle Book.
Yeah,
which we all liked.
Good. I liked and made money. That's good. That's amazing.
Yeah. We're only 6 films in and we found a film that we actually quite like.
God, that took crazy.
That won't take long.
3 million.
Yeah, very decent.
It did very, very, very well. It is, and it's very, very
good. It is good. I like it.
Actually, The Secret Life of Pets.
I didn't see.
I have not seen this
looks
movie.
It cute.
I heard it's a bit
bland. It is cute.
Bland.
It is.
Waste of a premise. The Toy Story premise.
It's a bit of a pet project, isn't it?
Yeah.
It does an awful lot of Toy Story. Really does. In terms of plot and everything, it
doesn't
cute.
Go much further with it, does it?
When I said it looks cute,
it
looks good. I should stress that.
It's entertaining for the kids.
Alright, fair enough. That stamina of a faint phrase, isn't
it? It's a different animal.
For kids.
Yeah. No.
A 2, Finding Dory.
Which I liked. I liked a lot.
I wished I liked it more. It's fine, but it's not particularly
it's
inspiring.
Not classic Pixar.
It's okay.
Yeah,
it's okay. It's a little long. Or at least felt
okay. I thought it was like 98 minutes, even.
Then it has problems. It's a little long like that.
Like it is a minor Pixar work, but I think we're living in the age where stuff like Inside Out is very much a fluke or exception, which is a real tragedy.
Well, I think you're right. Cars 3,
which I'm hoping will involve like a plot point that features McQueen in 3 months in trash, addicted to painkillers. Grizzly pulling his way back.
Or they'll do a kind of a Uncanny Valley and bring Paul Newman back.
Tarkin. We're going to pull a Tarkin here.
Oh, there's a part of me that would actually like that, but that part's stupid.
I missed you, Phil.
And that one, Bridget Jones's Baby.
Really? Which is amazing.
Yeah.
Staggering.
Yeah. People missed her.
4.1 million is the only film to break 4 million.
Wow.
I'm going to be honest, I'm surprised that Hugh Grant is the one of the bunch that had the principle not to come back. Like Renée Zellweger, Colin Firth, that it was Hugh Grant who drew the line in the sand and was like, nope.
Bet you may. Nope. Wish he had.
Yeah.
Nope. Forget it. Can get McDreamy, but I'm out.
Yeah.
Well, good on them. I hadn't seen it. I've only seen the first one. I've never seen the second one.
I've heard it's quite enjoyable.
First one's good.
It's supposed to be,
my mother loved it, which is always like the benchmark that we use here at the Scannel podcast.
Well, yeah. Isn't it something that appeals to a different audience than a lot of those? So, like,
which
all
is great.
The cartoon ones appeal to the kids.
To audiences.
The superhero
ones appeal to a certain audience.
Yeah.
Narcissistic masochist.
Appeals to an underserved section of the...
Mainly ladies.
But it is.
Let's say it.
Yeah, it is, and it's good to see
the older ladies, particularly. It's that. Yeah, I agree.
The silver dollar.
Well, not necessarily silver, but it must be said. You know, they are, like you say, they are underserved. There's a certain percentage of.
And Helen Miller was very busy this year.
Yeah, it's just nice
making Fast and Furious 8.
Yeah, Meryl Streep can only make so many films.
But it's nice to see that they're driving these things forward. Yeah. But they can put these things to the top of the box.
They re-released Foster Jenkins in the States for
the Oscar push.
Yeah. And
well, no, my favorite Oscar push of the year, though, is the Oscar push for Sausage Fest, which is like
best original song and things like that.
Well, no, they won best animated picture as well, because they had like a pizza. They had several pizza mornings in New York, New York and Los Angeles with Seth Rogen. They're really pushing it.
But it's the animated guild that the animation section of the Academy that choose the
Sausage
Fest Party. Or Sausage Party made some enemies there in the animation thing by the way it treated its animators.
And this is the reason why you do more classic ones like Red Turtle or Cool One Two Strings or Only Yesterday, whatever. They are the ones that are
going
to Yesterday last year, but they are the kind of ones that
and I would argue they're certainly more deserving.
Good enough.
Into the top 10, proper.
Okay.
Now that we've got that out of the way, out of the system, we will start with Darren, 10 to 6.
10 to 6. So at number 10, The Nice Guys.
Ooh.
All right then. muted response from the crowd.
I like it. I do.
Yeah.
Not to that extent.
I liked it better when it was The Last Boy Scout.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping for something closer to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
And it has a Miss Pac-Man machine, which didn't quite have the link to
this was
1977.
That was why Niall docked it a full star. That's why it's not in Niall's top 30. Miss Pac-Man related continuity gaps. I thought the two leads
He's all over those.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many films have them these days. And then at number 9, Spotlight, which is the second year in a row the Best Picture winner has appeared in my top 10, which is remarkable.
It's good.
It's okay.
It's good.
I don't mind it. It's worthy and it's fine.
It's worthy and it's fine.
Nowhere within shout distance of my thoughts about you.
All right. Perhaps the first odd choice of the evening at number 8.
Oh, it's only the first of many.
The first of many, oh yes. The Girl with All the Gifts. The
Ooh.
Subversive zombie movie. It's
subversive
from,
in what way?
From Mike Carey.
I heard okay things about that. Remember?
Yeah, it's great.
And then probably forgot about it. You mentioned it.
Yeah, and then you forgot that it existed. It's a zombie movie for the Trump era, for the 2016 year that we had.
Okay.
It's very much good. It's the best adaptation of Ray Bradbury's I Am Legend that I have ever seen, and it's really.
Is that a low bar or?
Considering it's I Am Legend.
It's an I Am Legend and the Omega Man. Those are the two competitors.
All right, that's good enough.
It's very well constructed. It's got a great cast and it's got a fantastic ending, I think.
I really should watch this. It's Glenn Close in a zombie movie.
And Paddy Considine.
God, no, they're not noticed. Yeah.
And Paddy Considine as well.
Dear Diary, we found our movie tonight.
Which I wholeheartedly endorse and recommend.
Okay. Good enough.
This is, I suspect, something that is going to appear on several other people's top 10. Hell or High Water.
Yes.
It may pop up somewhere along the way.
Yeah. It may or may not. I suspect there's a chance this is great. I have two films pegged as being the Scanlon Film of the Year, and this is one of them. Yes, really loved it, but we'll probably talk about it when we'll get a bit more into it. And then at number 6, and I suspect this one will not be vying for the Scanlon Best Film of the Year, 10 Cloverfield Lane. Which has that wonderful video nasty sort of feel to it.
Number 22 on my list.
I quite liked it when I watched it. And then about a week later, I thought about it and I was like, it's okay. I enjoyed it.
I mean, it's passable entertainment, certainly. Great performance, great concept, great execution.
I don't know what it is. Don't rub me up the wrong way, exactly. But just put the end though. It's like
for me, it's the genre shift. I really don't know why this is what it is.
The genre shift, and this is the year I think of genre shift.
Yeah,
like, you talked about Bone Tomahawk. We talked about like
it's I'm not serial killer as well. It suddenly switches genre.
Yeah, and I like that. I think that this is
the thing. Is that though? I might be a bit conservative with my genre.
This is the year of the genre shift. 2016 started as a comedy and then quickly became a horror. So I think in some ways, 10 Cloverfield Lane is really one of the films in that sort of sense. It's also a film about a white guy locking up women in his basement, which is also a 2016 film in certain ways.
No, this is not bad. More meta into every film.
Oh, don't
this is what Darren does.
Oh, don't worry. My top. I promise I won't get back.
I love how the Disney lad said that Rogue One wasn't any sort of meta message film when it's about the imperial power dominating.
Well, I mean, like you say, that's a Star Wars. Star Wars was originally written as a Vietnam story. Yeah. That was George Lucas wanted. Well, it's about the Rebel Alliance meant to be the Viet Cong, and the evil empire is the United States.
This is a like.
Yeah. Well, that's it. That's the thing that I loved. I don't know if we're going to talk about Rogue One later on, but one of the things I liked about Rogue One was the fact that somehow I doubt Phil and Jay are going to be the ones to bring it up.
Well, I haven't seen it. Last night.
At midnight, Jay. Where have you been?
Sleep.
I like the first half because it does have stuff like rebels doing collateral damage and attacking civilian targets.
I will see it though. I am a kind of looking forward.
Problematizes or problematizes, which is that word that we love here in the podcast.
And
one guy who is amoral in his actions, and then later you find out why, which is very interesting.
And I think it's a very relevant, very modern, very clever way of looking at Star Wars.
He's set up to be a hero, even though he's like.
So my number six film then is Rogue One. No, it's 10 Cloverfield Lane. We just segued
in. It's not bad. But, I like this. It's interesting.
That's my top five.
Top six. My second five.
Okay, to follow that.
Tough crowd.
Yeah, so this might be a slightly less...
2016?
Well, I don't know about that. Anyway, I will start. My number 10 is Cemetery of Splendor. Anybody? Anybody?
I didn't get to see it. I really wanted to.
Yeah.
Turkish films, it's the way to go.
It's not Turkish.
It's Thai. It's What's Your Face.
Abhijapong.
That's the one, yeah.
A.k.a. Joe.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's Mustang is the Turkish one, isn't it?
Yes. No, this is...
Follow-up to Uncle...
To Uncle Boon Mee, who can recall his past life. Pam Dorwin from...
Which I did like.
Yes, and... If you like that, which I did, I think you
this
would
like...
This
is very much in the same...
Yeah, this is about a strange goings-on surrounding a sleeping sickness at a military hospital. But it's one of those wonderful blends, the medical and the mystical, that he does so well.
Okay.
It's kind of...
It was on that kind of...
The list.
Watch, and
it's... You know, if you like the director's stuff, you'll know what to expect, and you will probably.
Yeah, that seems what people are saying about it anyway. Like, yeah. it's that.
I mean, it's maybe not quite up there with, say, Syndromes in a Century, but it's still a hypnotizing watch. Number 9 for me is Queen of Earth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Alex Ross Perry makes up for Listen Up, Philip. That's no mean feat.
I had real problems with this stuff, Phil, but I really like this. It's just outside my top 20.
I enjoyed this. Elizabeth Moss and Catherine Waterston retiring to the country for a week to try and relax and nearly killing each other in the process. It's a 70s hearkening psychodrama with two fantastic lead performances, and it looks and sounds phenomenal. Love this. Number 8, very late entry to my list, Things to Come. Mia Hansen loves follow-up to Eden, with Isabelle Huppert giving one of the performances of the year.
Eden, of course, made an appearance in Bold Darkness last year.
That's true. This is Huppert playing a philosophy teacher in a French high school who was suddenly confronted with her husband leaving her, pretty much out of the blue. And that just begins a series of events that leads to this woman suddenly finding herself strangely liberated from a lot of social norms and ties, and how do you respond to that? The wonderful thing about this film is that it doesn't go the way you expect. It's wonderfully mature and level-headed, and it's not going to go down any kind of histrionic or hysteric roads. It's quite something. Wonderfully calm, and as I say, Huppert is, as usual, great. Number 7... This is number 7 on every list. This could be something. Hell or High Water.
That's the bingo. That is how you say it, right?
Yeah.
You just say bingo. But so Jeff Bridges chases Chris Pine and Ben Foster across the southern US deserts. It's great.
I'm amazed at how good Pine is in it.
This is his best work.
Yeah.
Ben Foster is intense. Shock horror.
Yeah, surprise. play against type there.
I'm slightly unhinged. Yeah. Shock horror.
Jeff Bridges is always great value. He's turning the drawl up to 11 as the sheriff.
Yeah.
These are two guys who are driven
doing his best Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah. Oh, except for the outhouse, farmhouse, and other houses. But
Washington, I don't think more No Country for Old Men. But
yeah. It. Oh, fair enough.
He gets to see that. Now.
He plays sheriffs a lot. That's the point. But this is one. This is one that is tense as hell. Looks great. Well acted, and has a sly commentary to it as well. Another 2016 film.
A phenomenal ending, actually. It's great. We were talking earlier about how difficult it seems to be to end films.
It's one of the best endings I've seen in quite some time.
Yeah, I talk about dragging the tension right out.
Yeah,
it's great. And my number six film of the year is The Witch.
Is it the season of The Witch film?
No, thank God,
have you got
it's
to pick up every stitch?
No.
Okay.
No. This is.
I like
as
the
a debut feature. This is something. Puritan family are forced to move out to the woods, and stuff happens. Is it a witch? Is it religious fervor gone wrong?
It's quite explicit early on what it is, to be fair.
Is that true?
Is this a Skeskanon film member?
Don't push me, Jay.
I liked it, but I kind of watched it. Didn't like it the way people were liking it. If you know, I didn't kind of go, oh, wow.
Yeah,
And then about a couple of weeks later, it kind of
clicked.
In the back of my head, I was like, yeah, okay, I think I need to see this again. And now I have the perfect opportunity. But I will, so it's not on my list, but I think it's one of those films that will have a bit of staying power.
Yeah. I only saw it the once, but I would love to rewatch it.
Same,
and only because I need to be able to think about it some more, because the first time I was terrified. Because I genuinely did not know where this was going to go.
Yeah.
I loved it.
And it was all shot using natural light, I believe, as well, so it looks amazing.
Really washed out and grey. Yeah. The colours are phenomenal.
No, it's definitely a rewatch.
And it looks $10 million. It only cost one.
Yeah.
And a great cast again with the commitment to that ye olde English.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I recommend it as a double, double feature with Goodnight Mommy as your other one.
All right.
Which one first?
You will not sleep for a week.
Which one first? Okay, fine.
And also one of the best animal performances of the year from Black Phillip.
Indeed.
My namesake. Bless him. or don't, as the case may be.
Yeah.
Jason, 10-6.
Okay. Right, number 10. Right, now all I can say is
it's Batman versus Superman, isn't it?
For me, it's a film.
Really?
Oh, you!
No,
you monster!
I know what you're going to
say. You monster!
You're thinking OJ made the right
guy. Jay nearly choked me.
I know what he's picked. I know it now.
Lemonade.
Oh, okay.
Beyonce.
Yeah.
Hold on. We had a big argument about how Made in America wasn't a film because it premiered on television.
Also, it's 5 hours long.
It was
a 6-part documentary or 7-part documentary.
And this
film is just one thing for me. That's why I kind of.
So where does this fit?
Beyonce. Well, I watched it thinking, right, I'll watch it because, you know, it's, you know, I like culture. As you said.
Pause for laughing.
No, I do like Beyonce, but I did want to watch it because I've heard it was good. Sat down to watch it. I think it's only about an hour and something long, about an hour and six. And I was blown away from it. There's a complete narrative, beginning, middle, and end. She gets at all sorts of stuff. There's touched on suicide, it touched on infidelity, it touched on the black experience in America, but it does it in the most brilliant way. Like, the songs are great, and they enforce and really bear themes of the songs.
Yeah.
How it's shot. It's shot by various different directors, including Beyonce. There's lots of people do it.
She directed one part of it, also Jonas Ackland, Mark Romanek.
Just terrific. I mean, it's genuinely great. Like, I was stunned by it. Like, I thought it was brilliant.
It is, and it would have made my top 30 if I considered it to be a film.
Well, this is why,
a lot of people would argue with you about that.
No, you're probably right, though. I'm not saying it is.
I'm easy on this.
In some ways, I'm not saying it is, but I'm put it in there because
I
liked it in there.
It's as valid as anyone that premieres on Netflix.
I think that's fair. I think that is a fair point.
Right.
Because
so
if HBO
if we had, say,
Seasons
Channel,
HBO,
though, for example.
Yeah.
Or
I'm going to live there that lived down the lane.
The
Curious Girl lived down the lane, or whatever it
is. If we pick True Memoirs of an International Assassin, as I almost
did. Let's get into my top 5 before we talk that one.
Kevin James, we hardly knew you.
Yeah. But listen, luckily, there's a debate about what this kind of whether film and whether in some ways it really matters. And I think there's good argument
to be made. And to be honest, I don't think this is the first debate that
it's
going to lead to.
No, I would agree that it is a
really,
beautiful piece
really
of
like
work.
So,
an hour and a half long, or an hour and 10 minute long music video,
but it's a lot.
But
more
I mean,
than
so
that.
Is Coin and Scatty by that logic.
Yeah,
I would argue Coin and Scatty is a classic film.
If 10 hours of some guy sleeping is considered to be a film, as
or
a,
7
but
hours
somehow,
of Empire State Building,
but somehow 7 hours of O.J. Simpson in America.
It's not because it was 7 hours.
It was because it was premiered in blocks like a TV show. But you know, in fairness to Darren, subsequently I found that was shown as a kind of release, I think.
Right.
So I wouldn't have made my top 20 anyway, but it was very good. Anyway.
I can't wait to see what number 9 is.
After all that.
We'll get back to relative normality. Number 9, Anomalisa.
Ah, you beauty.
I'm a big Coffin fan. Perhaps at the time it came out, it was a touch disappointed. I was expecting something slightly more. But I don't know, maybe I'm being harsh on Coffin, but I expect him to give everything he ever had.
Want you to keep making the best
films ever made. He's only made the film that's in my top 3 films of all time, which is
Cinecittà
New York. But maybe I'm holding up a little high.
I think
that's fair. And it's one I haven't rewatched yet, because I'm kind of afraid to, because it's a grim experience.
It really is.
It's very entertaining and very well put together and beautifully done. But Jesus, it's sad.
It is, and that's why it's so so affecting. And
it's very rich in that regard.
Also very funny.
It is.
David Thewlis has said his best.
Yeah. And also Tom Noonan.
As everyone.
And Jennifer Jason Leigh, lest we forget. I never thought I'd have my heart broken by a performance of Girls Just Want to Have Fun, but there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. But you see, the thing is, we were talking about earlier, like a couple of years to breathe in films to see what it is. And I think that's one
that will grow.
Yeah, I think so.
It's timeless.
Yeah.
I suspect that the films that grow from 2016 will be the cult films. Will be the
you may be right. You may be right.
Mm. Anyway.
Number 8, Mustang.
Nice.
Because it's pretty great.
And it's beautiful.
It is a beautiful film. And the way it's shot reflects the kind of, the camera moves with the characters in it, the kids. You've seen it.
I have.
You didn't like it as much?
Not as much, no.
Oh, okay.
It didn't trouble my top 20.
No, I really liked it. And I watched it instead of Evolution, which they were screened, remember, at the same time, and Adif. Evolution is in my top 20, but it didn't quite make my top 10.
I preferred Evolution.
I thought I would until I saw Mustang, and I preferred Mustang. But there you go.
Okay. I like it. And all the Ivan Reitman, David Duchovny films.
Yeah. And I really like the end of it as well.
Sorry.
Beg your pardon?
I really like the end as well, which is...
I think this was one of the big talking points of the film.
Yeah, but some people didn't. I did. I thought I ended just so.
Okay.
Anyway. At number 7, and touching again on what Niall said about how we do premiere films, 13th. The Ava DuVernay.
The Netflix one, yeah. It is very, very good.
Which is blood-boilingly angry...
Yeah,
making
and justifiably.
It made me kind of you'd be furious at watching it. It's,
which is what it's
yeah, which is
really
well.
Yeah.
But it's beautifully edited. I mean, beautifully edited. Well, she's a fucking fabulous filmmaker.
Yeah.
Like she really is. Like I've only one of her films still to see, or debut. I've seen the others, the one before Selma, and I think Oliver Follows the first one, and something else that Oliver Follows really good. I can't remember the first one, but that's the only one I've seen. But she's very, very good filmmaker. And she's a TV show called Queen Sugar, which I heard is excellent, which is on my list. And she's the first black woman to $100 million movie.
Yeah, which is a standard that took so long.
Yeah, no, it is.
Which is
it's
another thing to be angry about.
It's notable and it should be notable, but but still.
And she's
upwards and
outwards.
Very few women
who've done that.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah, which is also something to be angry about.
But if you haven't seen 13 Dots,
no, it's very,
great.
Very good.
It's pretty great. Number 6, A Day for Mad Mary, which is a fine, fine Irish film. It's a fine film. It's really, really good. Shauna Kersley. She's the main character. And she is a tour de force.
She is
brilliant. And there's a couple of bumps in the film, but Jesus, she carries it right over them without any trouble. It's one of the great central forms of the year, I think. And some notable support in it as well. But it's a fine film. Really, really good. Really tense.
I really meant to check out.
Really, I think you'd like it. It's well made. And
as a featured directorial debut.
I think it's very, very confident and very, very, really, really well made.
Good.
There we go.
Nile.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to preface this with a oh! Here we go.
Here we go.
Since becoming a father, I don't have as much time as I used to go out. So a lot of the films that I've seen, because of the very nature of the site, are Irish in nature.
But it's also been a phenomenal year for Irish film.
And you're spoiled for choice. If you haven't, it's not like you used to be. Don't see those two films, you've missed the best of it.
True.
There's seven or eight.
And I don't think it needs to be qualified, to be fair. No, I don't think we need to say that it's handicapped in some way. The Irish film this year has been very good.
No. So a lot of them I caught either at the festivals or on TV at home. So I did. Depending on what way the format came to be.
Your son could be doing Irish film such a service.
So that's my thing.
Okay, no, that's fine.
So at 10, I started off with Irish Mamo. So
this may well be appearing.
Yes, I would imagine it is. Rebecca Daly's second feature. It is an extraordinary piece of work.
It's a brilliant film.
It is as close to classic French cinema as
it's great art of cinema, full stop. It's simple as that.
There's an action career that I felt never took off as it should.
She's great. And she's great here. Like, she's
excellent.
Well, it helps to have Barry Keoghan as well, who is
one of our serious talent. One of his proper actors.
And they work very well together. They work very well together in complete silence.
Yeah.
And
that's a tough thing
to
pull off.
It's an awkward film. It's tension filled. It's weird. It's beautiful. It's moving. It's just great.
It's lost in a set at night, and it really uses artificial light brilliantly.
Yeah.
It's
haunting.
I thought the performances were very good. The rest of the film, I could leave.
I think we had a discussion.
The performances were great. The performances were really, really great.
I loved it, but I could see how it could turn off somebody as well in that regard. Like, I mean,
keep in mind, I didn't like Evolution, so I'm not the audience you're sort of aspiring towards with this.
It's not immediately accessible.
Yeah.
No.
And it's very much a slow burn.
Yeah.
So
I can go for slow burn.
And also, it's not available, which is really bloody irritating.
Yeah, you were looking for it on Volta, right?
Yeah, I was looking for Volta, it seems like DVD. Which is absurd, I have to say.
Here.
But anyway, whoever, you know, wants to drop me a DVD of it, if you're listening.
Hint, hint.
At Jay Coyle on Twitter. Bum, bum, bum.
To be honest, anyway, I'd take a copy too.
Yeah, it's so
flipping very quickly away from solemn and Irish to fast-paced and international, I'm going with The Assassin at number 9.
Wow!
Yeah, because Mother
Ancien
of God.
I've never seen it. I missed it.
The pace of it is quite something.
It's maddening.
It's breathtaking.
It's
beautiful.
It is astonishingly beautiful.
Yeah.
But it's also so slow. I mean, really.
I don't
slow.
Think so.
Just wanted somebody to do something.
Somebody please do something.
Are we still talking about Mamo?
No, The Assassin.
Sorry.
It's
undeniably beautiful.
As a cinematic experience, it is just like being enveloped in colour and, I just absolutely adore this.
No, fair enough. I mean, I saw it and I just, it is great. When the action scenes come, because it's a Wuxia film, they're actually remarkably graceful. It is an astonishing looking film. It's one of the best looking films I've seen in years. And, the story of this female assassin in ancient China, it just moves so slowly, and everything else in it feels like it should be, pick up the pace, dude, come on, we haven't gone all day.
I genuinely never felt that it was really slow. I felt that it was, it was luxuriating in its own elegance, which is fine by me.
It's fine, but the place and the plot, which is all over the shop, I could not follow it.
Plot is not everything.
Yeah, I know, but this is complex. It's like political intrigue, right? I think it's fine. Yeah, I would gladly take a screenshot of any of it hanging on the wall.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And that's not the worst thing you could say about a film.
It really isn't, to be fair. I mean,
no.
At 8, Pete's Dragon.
Aww.
I haven't seen this.
You
I'm
can
really
tell
rare.
Which one of the four of us is a father.
I watched it only yesterday.
It's a lovely story.
It really, and it's, do you know what? It's so old-fashioned. In the it's so traditional, it's so earnest, and earnest in not a cloying way. It's genuinely,
it earns,
it's full
it's
of wonder and love and all the things that make you vomit when it's done so cynically and done so often. And this is not, this is heartlessly genuine. And the characters were worth caring about, the people are worth watching, and the dragon is great.
And because it's Declan Lowney, it's got a proper feel of America to it. It's got a proper, it's like it, it's a story told in a small town in America, and it feels very much of that place, and it is.
And it has that giant redwood of America.
Robert Redford. If you were to cut him at his core, you would find...
You couldn't see many rings. He used his soul as America.
Brilliantly. So having Robert Redford...
And Carl Urban.
Carl Urban. And the kids.
And the kid's not the usual American annoying kid that you get.
So this is an upgrade on these big CGI monsters she took up against last year,
Absolutely.
Oh, thank heavens.
She didn't have to wear heels either.
The dragon more heels.
He's big, green and fluffy. He's a
fluffy dragon. Yeah, really. Why does that image appeal to me so much?
And it took off, the first time, reminded me of Never Ending Story.
Which is good, because like Bastion always deserved a better movie than the Neverending Story.
He definitely did.
And then at 7, it's Sing Street.
I thought that might make an appearance somewhere.
That's on my list to watch. I'm hoping to see it in the next couple.
It was a great opener for the film festival.
It really was. The tower in that room was great. It was just so much fun. It's nice to have fun at the cinema like that.
The cinema is a solemn place of reflection.
Yes, it is. Yes, I don't know what's wrong with that statement, Darren. Stop laughing.
It should be devoted solely to 3-hour epics about Jesuit suffering in Japan.
But we'll talk about silence in the
next
new
year.
It can be all things to all people.
I agree with that entirely.
No, I'm not arguing.
As a guy who nominated 10 Cloverfield Lane and the nice guys, I don't think I have the high ground here.
It's a story of Dublin through rose-tinted glasses. It is the 80s,
people kind of want it to be to an extent. It has a really dark core to it that I really like. It's buried beneath the happiness and the joy and singing.
But there's
an incredibly dark and accurate portrayal.
It's a story of divorce. It's a story of abuse. But all of which has this... Veneer over it, and it's just
which in some ways makes it a perfect movie about Ireland in the 80s, because there's that sense of something lurking beneath the surface.
Bob Geldof.
I was going to say, here's the question though. Why do so many Irish films end with the characters leaving the country?
Because in the 80s, that's the only option.
I liked Sing Street, I have to admit.
Counterpoint to the commitments, where they kind of work well. You have Maria Dyle Kennedy in both.
You don't really shit themselves.
This is the Dublin music cinematic universe.
Well played, Brother Rabbit.
I really enjoyed Sing Street. Then at 6, talking about a 3-hour long epic of pain and misery, Son of Saul.
Hey!
It's all good, baby. It's all
good.
This
is astonishing.
This is an incredible film. But mother of God, it's tough to watch it.
Yeah. Ooh. But it's a Holocaust film. You're not expecting sweetness and light.
Yeah, no. Absolutely.
That said, though.
This was the film I probably look forward to most at Edith. And I was crushingly disappointed in it.
Ouch.
I was staggered that I was so disappointed, because I really, really wanted to see it. Mm. And Holocaust films are right up my street.
Jay, haven't you learned anything? Never expect good things from anything.
I know.
Never hope.
I get why people love it, but the kind of singular take of it, that kind of narrowed stuff on the thing.
The suffocating claustrophobia.
I didn't feel it was anything beyond... That could have been said anywhere in some way. And it was so...
The other three of us are looking at each other.
I know.
I think it
didn't have anything to say for me at all.
It's hard to go to that story and find something new.
Maybe everything
is
being said.
But it's a story worth repeating, particularly at this moment in time.
Fine, but it just didn't work for me.
But I would agree with what the other guys are saying, that it's a story to find a new spin on. So your best bet is to try and tell it a different way. And why couldn't it? I found this.
No, and it definitely did that.
Oh, yeah.
It just didn't work for me in that regard.
That's fine.
Oh,
tough room. So just to put that in perspective, we've all done our you know 6 to 10 films.
Yes.
Of the 20 possible options that we could have had, 19 different films. Only one film has appeared twice.
Wow.
And that is Hell or High Water.
It's looking
so
good for that.
This is the year that we've been. This is the year that it's been. People.
It's been going
the
way.
There'll be a little bit more.
There will be some overlap there. Just looking at
now
this.
We got 5 all around the table too. Darren, number 5.
I'm just going to draw up my list right now. Thank you.
To the list maker.
To the list maker. At number 5, Creed, which I absolutely loved. It is, we're talking about old stories, familiar story beats that have been told very, very well before. We're talking about returning to classic material. We're talking about a year where it hasn't necessarily been the most original content at the box office. I think Creed found a way to take an archetypal American story, which is the Rocky franchise, the underdog champion, and do something new and interesting with it, in that I think one of the more interesting aspects of Creed is the way that it takes the working class pathos of Rocky and filters it through a sort of a millennial middle class window. Like, Rocky is a man who aspires to something better from a rough life that he's had, whereas the lead character in Creed, very much he has a life of relative comfort and security and financial stability, but he's looking for meaning, and I think that the film captures that very well. And I think it also does very well as it starts from a place where Culver is directing it almost as a more indie film, where you have like the long takes and you have the more brutal fights earlier in the film, and then it becomes a more Rocky film, the point where the final fight is a much more conventionally ended, fantastically constructed film, but it's very much in the style of a Rocky film, which comes a long way from the backroom brawls at the start. I think it's just fantastic.
I think it's a miraculous reboot of it. Probably one of the most defining American cinematic franchises.
Yes.
It's lasted a long time.
It
77
has,
from
really
the first one.
Yeah, and it's chugged away in the background as well. Like, Rocky Balboa, while it wouldn't have made my top 10 of the year in question, was also a great film, I think.
I would also argue that, and I watched it in the light of watching Creed, Rocky 3, which is...
With
Clubber Lang, isn't it? Is that Rocky 3?
Rocky 3 is the one with Mr. T, right?
Yeah, Clubber Lang.
It's not bad.
Yeah. It's really good. Look, it touches on a lot of things that Creed does. In terms of the black experience within that story. I mean, Clubber Lang is the white woman's nightmare, the aggressive black man coming to take your woman, you know, that kind of stuff. It's some really interesting stuff. And this is mid-80s, in a popular franchise.
Yeah,
it's much darker than I remember it being.
Yeah.
Do you know?
I suspect that's largely because it's Mr. T.
When they think of Rocky 3,
that's what they think.
There's a lot of fools to be pitied there.
It also included the Red Scare as well, so you have very much...
Whereas this is very much updating that story to now.
Yeah.
It's fitting in not just with the millennial angst, but also with the black experience as it is now in the States.
And I mean, like, Jordan and Culver are a fantastic
combination. Michael B. Jordan is the...
He's great. He is a star.
As much as I've complained about the Marvel films, I'm really looking forward to their Black Panther together.
Me too. I really am too.
I really am, because there's just a wonderful combination. Fruitvale Station, also for the internet.
And this will always, you know, the way they say, well, you get a good director from Marvel and they're straight jacked away Marvel. Looking at Creed, Coogler, I think, has the best chance of breaking out from that, because he can take something and mould it into his own.
I think Shane Black and James Gunn, I think, are the exception. I think Coogler will be another.
But I think Gunn got away with it because it was such
Nobody cared.
It was just this toss off between the real Marvel.
You have a talking raccoon.
I think Black's probably going to
Black
this week.
Because
Let him do. He's good, this guy.
I agree, though.
So,
I think it's great.
Creed is my fifth favourite. Phil, what was your fifth?
My fifth favourite? It was a film that made me do something that I really didn't do enough of at the cinema this year. It made me smile from ear to ear.
Aww.
Everybody Wants Some.
Everybody wants a.
Everybody's cool when you're part of a team.
Much the same effect, and it is a film about trying to be part of a team.
I actually really, really liked it.
Okay, on the surface level, it is a hilarious comedy about. Well, not a buddy comedy, a film about trying to establish who your buddies are and trying to find your way in the college experience. And if somebody's going to do that, I'm glad it's Richard Linklater, who he's covered similar ground in The Lights of Dazed and Confused, to which this has been pegged as the spiritual sequel. But I don't know, draw your own
conclusion. Yeah, but that's marketing.
Of course. But this, apart from the fact that it is often hilarious, and besides the fact that the cast are great and the period recreations, it looks great, sounds great, soundtrack, all that. But it's also dealing with that experience of you're going to college, you're trying to find your own niche, while at the same time trying to fit into a group. And that's an experience that young people, young men especially, in college, they're trying to establish who they are within certain confines, whilst at the same time rubbing against those and trying to break out. I think it captures that beautifully.
Well, that's it. I would argue it's one of the best college indoctrination films that I've seen. It's one of the films that captures the...
It does sound harsh, but
the experience of going to college and having your worldview broadened to a perspective and welcoming other perspectives and not being in conflict. Like, the film has no central conflict to it.
No.
And that's part of what's so
and
great.
And there's nothing under... nothing on the line. Not even the fact... Like, there's the fact that it's happening on the weekend before college starts and it has a clock ticking down.
But
it means nothing. It means nothing. It's just... Time is passing.
It actually goes past the clock.
Yeah, yeah. It goes through negative numbers and nothing happens. Nothing bad happens.
I agree. That's probably the best... That's one of its strengths. The cast is definitely one of his strengths. I'd agree with that.
Glenn Powell's the breakout star of the year. Great.
And I said I enjoyed it. I did laugh occasionally. I didn't find it hilarious. There was some good scenes in it though, that I did laugh at. But it was okay. I don't want to rain on it as such. It was enjoyable enough. I felt I'd seen it before.
That's
probably many times, but it was amiable enough when I watched it.
As somebody pointed out to me, it's very weird to live in a world where Blake Jenner is in two of my top 20 films of the year.
That is odd.
That is a very strange world, because he's also in The Edge of 17, and he's also very good in both of them. And I never would have pegged him as a 2 in the 20 guy.
There you go.
There you go.
Some fine moustaches as well.
Oh, God, weren't they great? There was Tyler Hoechlin. He made him look like Freddie Mercury by way of Matthew McConaughey.
All right. Yeah. No, that was
this film is alright. Yeah. And
it's better.
Everybody wants
it. It's better than alright.
It is great.
So, Jay.
Number five, we've been here already. Hello, High Water.
I know.
This is pretty great. And it's one of those ones where, as soon as I finished watching it, I was like, is this like 4.5? Is this really up there? And then I eventually settled on a 4 with the kind of thinking, it's like, and a rare feeling for me is like, I kind of really want to watch this again straight away.
Yeah.
And but you were talking about it earlier, and then like all the things yourself and Phil said, and wherever and I said about it, all right, all correct, and really good. But what kind of impressed me more about it than anything else, and besides all I've already said, is that kind of mournful tone. You know that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Eastwood gets that in Unforgiven.
Yeah.
That the kind of
the world is
something.
Ending.
Yeah.
The world is fading
and it's weaved all the way through the film.
It is.
And that gives it a beautiful kind of almost just the sunset of something. This is
The idea of like the banks as modern prospectors and as the modern equivalent of the rail company that are destroying
small
lives.
Shit about banks
and
nobody cares about them because like fuck them, let somebody rob them. Yeah. Like, because of shit.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful film like to look at and it just
really melancholy.
There's
a death of one character late on in the film and you're expecting it but you still think. Oh.
Yeah, I did as well.
It's inevitable, unavoidable, but it's also tragic.
Do you know what's wonderful about that scene? And just in a technical sense, when it happened was not when I expected it to happen.
No,
because there's a familiar build-up to that point,
and then
it happens, and it kind of wrong foots you in that way.
The tempo is fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
The tempo of the scene is.
I like Mackenzie as a director.
I have
done for quite some time.
This is one thing I want to say is, I mean, we talked about the cast, but I think this is one of the best directed films of the year.
I think it is. I've liked
some of the stuff before,
and it's economic.
This
is not 2.5 hours. Don't get in, get out.
And to be clear, this has appeared on 3 of our lists before any other film.
It appeared on 4. Stay tuned.
A week ago, this was number 2 on my list.
What happened?
And I did a bit of a
clean up.
As I said, I've settled on it. I'll watch it again. We'll see.
The water level dropped.
Not much though. I mean, it really didn't. Like this is.
Would you say
really
it's a hell or high water mark?
I would say it's very good. It's very very good.
It really is.
At 5 for me, Love and Friendship.
Ah,
I'm glad that got in the top 10 because it's number 13 on mine.
Just outside my top 10 too.
It's pretty goddamn great.
It is
the funniest costume drama that there has ever been.
I think you're probably right.
Okay,
I don't know.
My most comfortable story doesn't really count.
Yeah.
I'd like to
point it
out. I'm going to go with
Darren
on that.
I know what you're saying.
Just the proper costume drama.
Yeah.
It's
not the Netflix release costume drama.
If it wasn't for Shauna Kerslake's role in The Day for Mad Mary will have the standout performance of the year in Tom Bennett's.
Oh, he is.
The peas! All the peas!
Welcome, and <Anvis. laughs> which two will be losing? But he keeps it going!
It's close!
And that came from a honest to God mistake from the producer, Katie Holly. She accidentally said it because she was really tired. She said something about the commandments, and Reece Stillman wrote it into the script.
But it just how the scene plays out longer than it should. It's what gives it
the character he plays. It's just so brilliantly awkward.
I love how he's described as a rattle, a bit of a rattle.
And it's in the
opening. Where they set everybody up with a little something.
It's Wes Anderson-ish. It was great. Love it.
Yeah, and he is a genius.
Kate Beckinsale is fantastic.
Her best performance.
It is her best performance. Her best work. She's phenomenal.
Yeah. Kate, not that we want to give you career advice, but only work with Stillman.
Yeah.
Like strong directors.
She has another one. Underworlds
coming
out.
It's a fine film.
Are there more?
There's another one.
It's also
6 Feet Underworld.
An absolutely beautiful looking film.
Yeah.
The production design and costume design is impeccable.
And it's a lovely structure. Like, there's a really nice.
It's very well presented. It's technically proficient in almost every angle. The performances are just great.
Yeah. No, but this is just missed out my top 10. I was right in the running to be in there.
Same here.
I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Then we got 4.
And this is the last time that I smile on this list.
Yay!
I know, it's all upwards from here on out. Hail Caesar, which I know a lot of people didn't like, but I absolutely love.
Would that it were so simple.
Twould that it were so simple. Why are you saying trip?
Put your hand out.
Oh, okay. Phil, you didn't have to hit me for that gag to work.
Oh, but it made me laugh. That's all I know.
But it is
Channing Tatum with the dog and
throwing the box of money. But it has the best physical gags I have seen in God knows how long. It is basically a collection of scenes loosely assembled around
it
the
is,
themes
yeah.
of capitalism and Marxism.
But they don't
and religion.
Care.
But
they don't
the
care.
Gags are good enough that they work. I mean, like the entire gay joke about Channing Tatum dancing at the bar, no dames, which is a beautiful set piece physically in terms of choreography and
it's
stuff.
Great.
But it's also
it's
a single extended sort of like Trey Parker-esque joke, which I love. But it has even stuff like the divine presence to be shot, or
two
Tilda Swinton.
I don't know. That's the one thing that poked me out
with the 18,000 readers demand, 19,000 readers demand. But even stuff like the performance from George Clooney, like lecturing on Marxism by
that's
explaining
great,
shaving Cary Grant's back, who benefits? Who
and
benefits?
And then Eddie Manning gives him a slap down again. I'm sorry, Eddie. You don't forget
Eddie
your
change.
Yeah.
And in the midst of all this, Josh Brolin as the lead.
Brolin's great. He actually doesn't get enough credit for that role. I think he's really good.
And I mean, even stuff like the dinner scene, which is incredibly cute and has a really nice heart to it.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, the entire. Yeah, I really, really, really loved
it. It made my top 20. It was out of 19, I think. And again, it was one of those that if you'd asked me earlier in the year, it'd be a bit higher. But it kind of just slipped down a bit, maybe because of its faithful memory is slightly
I agree
whatever,
with this,
but,
yeah.
But it's I laughed heartily that Sunday morning
the scene with that we have constantly referenced between Alden Ehrenreich and Ralph Fiennes saying, was it or simple?
So good,
I couldn't breathe.
I was in tear. Yeah. I couldn't see.
Alden Ehrenreich, that's your Han Solo, people, and I'm thrilled.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Not very good.
But I mean, even the earnestness
is complicated.
He's riding the horse.
And he does the flip and stuff. But it is like, and even stuff like the little moment where they interrupt for the Scarlett Johansson musical number that gives way to the swearing and the. But I mean, I am fonder of the Coen brothers' lesser comedies than most. So
you like the affectionate kind of ones, do you?
I do. I like even the Burn After Reading.
I like Burn After Reading.
Burn After Reading. That's George Clooney's working title.
I'm also a fan of Lady Killers.
In fact,
preferred it to the.
No,
I'm sorry, I do.
The Lady Killers, I do. But no,
I'm sorry.
But no,
sorry.
Just no.
I don't know, but I do.
I like things about the Lady Killers. I can't say I like
it. It's a very diplomatic answer.
I like it.
But anyway, so enjoy it. That's the last time we're going to smile at my top 10 list.
Excellent.
Phil?
My number 4, one that's been mentioned before.
Yay! Only the second film.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, this is quite something. Anyway, Anomalisa. Or anomalizer, yeah. whichever way you're feeling. It's... I cannot remember the last time an animated film broke my heart so.
Yeah.
It is sweet, and yet it's despairing, and it's funny, and yet... Hmm?
Toy Story 3.
Yeah, that's probably a good call. It's... Oh, wow. One of the reviews that kept getting quoted on posters, which summed up really nicely, the most human film of the year, and doesn't star a single human.
Yeah.
How did it do this? How did it make me just feel so, at once, so happy and yet so sad? And seriously, how? I mean, I've interviewed Duke Johnson, the director, and I'm still not sure.
Tom Noonan. That's the reason.
He does help. It really does help.
I did not to kind of not to get into the reasons why I love it. But one of the reasons I love it is that they get the deadening horror of hotel rooms so
unbelievably.
Like the little pretty things at hotel rooms that make you want to jump out the window when windows generally never open. It's a nameless horror, but they touch on it so well. Like.
Yeah, but of course that's what the film is about. It's about everything being to the extent the people are the same.
The blandness, the sameness of it all.
Yeah.
It is
immaculately designed, wonderful voice talent. Again, Tom Noonan especially, he's great.
He's great.
And it'll, as the children say, it may well get you in the fields.
Quite the sex scene as well.
I have to say, when I was watching...
That's a Mooney family movie, ready to roll.
might laugh, but...
Yeah, and you thought Team America was something.
Yeah.
Which is amazing that we're talking about. Yeah, it's only the second greatest puppet sex scene of our time.
So I look forward to the day when we can put a top 10 list together.
Yeah.
Wait, Howard the Duck, does that count?
Oh, maybe.
Let's move on.
It was mentioned before, Creed. It's absolutely glorious. A miraculous reboot and reimagining of a timeless classic American story.
Yeah.
It's taken something that is great American cinema, which Rocky is undoubtedly, and just brought into a world where everybody knows holy shit, Creed. And it's done that by bringing in like a director and writer, or director actor partnership that really understand what they're doing and what the film is about.
Yeah.
And crucially, get that across to an audience that goes, look, we know what we're doing, we have Rocky safe in our hands.
Yeah. It's also insanely accessible. Like it was a movie that my mother loved, despite the fact she hates boxing movies.
Yeah,
which is incredible.
I'd also mention Tessa Thompson doesn't get much mention.
She's
in Westworld as well. She's really, really good. And
but everything about Westworld is really, really good. Jay.
Well, we don't know. That's a different podcast. Stay tuned for that argument. But she's great, and it's only a small role. So she gets something to do, and she gets quite a bit to do. But it's just like in screen time terms, but she does a lot with it.
I'll say this much though: it's been a year where performances, no matter how big or small, I mean, this is something that the Coens do frequently. But supporting turns, they're the ones you're talking about.
Yeah.
Be it half of Hail Caesar, be it Tom Bennett in Love and Friendship, be it Tessa Thompson.
Every time Ralph Fiennes shows up in everything.
Yeah. True.
Pretty much.
I mean, a bigger splash was not in any of our top tens so far.
That dancing.
But him dancing is one of the scenes of the year. It's Emotional Rescue is...
Yeah. It's incredible to watch.
Ralph has been one of my favourite actors for years.
He's great.
Yes.
I mean, he's great.
He's a pretty fine choice, if you ask me.
Anyway.
Voldemort as well.
That's what we love.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about his performances encapsulating pure evil, Voldemort, whatever. She didn't miss that. Anyway.
That's it. Here.
At four for me, and Jason mentioned earlier, Coupon to Two Streams.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I think it was Darren.
I'll mention
it right now.
This is the best animated film of the year.
Yes, it is.
I really want to see it. I'm a big fan of
Laika.
Yeah, their films are good.
Yeah,
Paranormal is so sweet.
As with Paranormal and Coraline, it has the beautiful stop motion hand worked animation. It's a seductive film as well. It is.
And it's got a beautiful sort of allegorical story as well. It's a story about storytelling, which is something that I just love.
But it's also a Japanese story told by Americans, which is a very interesting take as well.
But more about silence next year.
Silence if we're lucky. Ghost in the Shell?
Oh dear.
But we have that whole idea of, you know, of vengeful spirits and all that sort of thing.
But making them work.
It's beautifully wrapped up. It's beautifully done.
The imagery is stunning. Yeah.
Like Kubo is, like, you warm to Kubo instantly. You know.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question about this though?
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure this answer. Literally, I'm asking it. My understanding is Kubo didn't do perhaps well as
financially.
No,
and is this a like a thing though? They're
tend to underperform.
Was Coraline the biggest?
Coraline, and the box trolls.
And my worry is that are they going to continue doing this, or the compromise is maybe that?
I hope not.
I mean, I they're doing very.
Yeah, I imagine these are the kind of things that do very well at home.
So I hope
DVD
so.
DVD sales,
yeah,
I can only
say.
You're waiting for the Leica equivalent of Cars 3, is basically what I'm getting from this.
Listen, I wouldn't begrudge them if it got them, you know, gave them
money
to
do
whatever. As long as they keep doing that.
They don't need to worry about money.
No.
Oh, and by the way, one other thing, Kubo.
They're owned by Phil Knight, who owns the chairman of Mikey.
But I presume they want to return on investment.
At some point, somebody in a meeting goes,
none of these, literally none of these are making any money.
I know you like
the bit where we throw the money down the table at you, but customarily you throw some back at
you. You hired me to be a financial manager. I just want to go. I feel as prudent as Mike Daly.
And one other thing.
The black hole of cash.
One other thing about Kubo. Ralph Fiennes strikes again.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's in it.
Okay. This is on my this weekend list.
Mine too.
Kubo
can't wait.
Is exceptional.
Good choice.
I really hope that it wins the Oscar. But
stiff competition.
I think the Red Turtle will.
Ooh, that is supposed to be good. Yeah. But we shall see.
And we've talked about this already, but Anomalisa, which is heartbreaking and beautiful.
You're really gone dark for your.
Oh, don't worry, it gets better.
This is
the twilight phase. Like, there's a scale where Hail Caesar and Anomalisa is about the halfway point.
Yeah.
Oh,
but it is heartbreaking and depressing and, like, soul-destroying and rending. And
but only that? Because it's so identifiable.
It is.
Yeah.
Like, again, you talked about the horror of the hotel rooms and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, even though, like, the expression where everybody in the world talks like Tom Noonan is, like, a Lovecraftian horror version of this, there is a sense that everybody can, in some stage, empathize with the idea of a world becoming so monotonous and so generic and, like, losing the spark. And discovering that you found the spark, only to see that spark fade. And
yeah.
I mean, this is the
same as everything else.
Yeah. This is the uplifting Darren Appleby's Gone On podcast. It's all good news all the time.
Evidently.
Everybody's going to die, and before you do, you'll realize it's a crippling, depressing existence.
Whoa.
2016, everybody!
in a film movie.
Yeah. But, I loved it. And the puppet work is amazing.
It really is.
And
it looks painstaking and painstakingly done.
Although there are only three actors involved, all three of them are great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Love it.
Phil?
It was my 13.
This is a phrase that we probably... Wow, I'm amazed we're seeing this again. This has been mentioned already. Son of Saul.
Yes.
Yeah, speaking of depressing.
Jeez, we're really getting into it now, aren't we?
Aren't we? this shook me, and rightly so. I mean, that camera just, it never looks at any horror directly. I tremble to think what might have happened if it had, even though, you know, this is recreations. This is not, you know, it's a fiction
But it's blurred on the very edges of the frame.
Isn't that, but that suggests so much in and of itself. It's a chilling, chilling film. And I was thrilled to see that it won the Oscar. For best foreign language film this year, it was. I needed a stiff drink afterwards.
Yeah, it was on at 11 o'clock in the morning.
It really was. It was a Sunday morning on the final day.
You seen in London?
I had.
It was a curious time to.
It was a really competitive style as well, because they also had that one, the Ruth Negga film.
They own it, and
they also had Zootropolis as well, which is really strange, because I thought it would have been nice to have, like, your Savoy film open with Son of Saul and then sort of.
A red
nicely.
Carpet, even.
Yes, and segue nicely into Zootopia and everything.
My worry about Son of Saul is that once you take something out of that kind of context, which is what it does, really, what's left to say? What do you feel? What is he feeling about as a director? And for me, not enough.
I think a bit more intent was visible.
I think it was an exercise to do something different. In a very real way, and that's
very well.
He definitely accomplished that. But to what end for me? That's my only thing. It's a reservation. I can appreciate the craft and the horror of it.
Okay, that's fine. Again, it all comes down to personal taste.
No, it does. It's not very good stuff. So, I wouldn't begrudge anybody, and I didn't begrudge its Oscar either. Like, yeah. I wouldn't begrudge anybody like it.
I suppose the ultimate argument is why make something like this when you have Show and Light and Fog? But
it's not as if there's like a set limit of films you can do.
Exactly. I don't think there is.
It's not as if some people are standing outside Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk going, no. It's been done.
Not that Harry Styles hasn't. But anyway, yeah, I take that point. And I think I have no problem keep making as many Holocaust movies as felt necessary. But I think you have to bring something else to the table to define your vision of it. And for me, that wasn't quite enough. Right. That's where I kind of left off.
Okay. Well, again, to each their own. This is what we're all about.
Yeah. Jason. Number three, I'm pretty sure this is not going to be on anybody's list.
Oh boy.
Right.
This always fills me with joy. When
this
Jay
fills me with dread.
You know
when
it
Jay cackles.
Ghostbusters.
Nine of Cups.
Oh!
Malak aforethought, eh? Thank you, I'm here all week.
I adored it. And I'd say, I know you and Ron Dodd's in a court, you both.
All the fun we had afterwards
of
that.
I watched it after that. Liked it. Wasn't 100% sure on it. But did like it. And I liked it more than you did. And we'd had discussions on it. I think. Subsequently rewatched then. A few months later. And it really, really clicked for me. And this is the thing with Malick. I mean, how far do you want to follow down
the rabbit hole?
I mean, this is like, you either go with this or you don't go with this.
I tried.
No, it's just
not everybody's cup of tea, eh?
Yeah.
Good night to you, sir.
But I absolutely adored it. I think it's a beautiful film. I know you were not as...
It's Emmanuel Lubezki. It might be beautiful.
I think the editing is great. I think how it's cut together is really, really good. I think the cast even get something to do. Brian Denny, who does fabulous voiceover work in it as well.
Everybody does voiceover.
Yeah, I know, but then we suffuse it with a real kind of both a menace and a kind of grandeur, I think.
But I mean, Denny, he's one of those actors.
Yeah, he's
a proper
stage actor.
He's hardly ever used.
I think he's very good in this. I think I like the part where the family are arguing, but you don't really hear it. The sound is right out. I like that kind of stuff, and then the camera will drift off to a room somewhere else. And then, again, people have said this Malick is parody of kind of what he's done before. That's a legitimate argument if you're going to feel that way. I completely disagree. I think it's an exceptional film. And I think it's one of those ones that will grow in stature as the years go by.
I'm forever debating whether I'll ever revisit To the Wonder. I don't think I'll be revisiting this somehow. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about people who said that this is Malick almost parodying himself. I would be one of those people.
I know, and I've heard it. And I've debated that with you.
Different strokes.
Yeah,
it just didn't work for me, but I'm thrilled to work for you.
First time I watched it, if it had gotten near the top 20, I'd have been happy enough. The second time, it really, really worked for me. That's all I can tell you.
Okay. Niall.
At number three for me is...
Nice call, Bill.
Going for the hat trick.
Hell or High Water.
Hey! Yay! Bingo!
The first film to complete the Scan on Film Podcast Bingo Sheet.
And will be the only one.
I suspect so.
Yeah,
or maybe it won't.
I think it will.
I'm pretty sure it will.
There's not much to be said that hasn't been said before. It is a remarkable film. The vistas, the landscape, the way it plays with light and... it is an extraordinary looking film. It's an extraordinary sounding film, and they are.
Nick Cave announced in the score.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch it now. It suits it so well.
Welcome to the Hell or High Water podcast. All the other films are just
the
lovely. Yeah.
No, but it is a melancholy story. But it's just absolutely beautiful to look at and beautiful to hear. It's just it's neat. The central performances are great.
Yeah, crossword.
And there's a beautiful combination between Chris Pine and
Ben Foster.
They're believable as brothers.
As brothers, yeah, exactly. One of them is the kind-hearted, more sort of to an extent.
And the one you think came up with the scheme didn't come up with the scheme.
Yeah.
Do you know, it does kind of play
it plays
on that
within its
genre
limitations nicely.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think that, like, Bridges and I think Foster are great, and they're expected to be great, but I think Pine is the movie's sort of wild card.
Yeah, I think he's very, very good.
He's the emotional heart of
the scene in the restaurant with
and he's also the drive, yeah, he's also the drive, I think, as well, the emotional drive. And yet, the scene where they try to confiscate her tip as evidence as well is just well observed.
There's so many moments.
Touching sense of humour in it, too. And when they go to the casino guy and they're trying to... This is like, yeah, screw the bags.
I do like the idea that there's within all of that, and all the just bank robbers and all that, there's genuine stakes in there. Like, there's reasoning, this is thought out.
And,
you know?
And there's always a threat of violence.
Over
the whole film, like that melancholy.
Which is the old Wild West.
That's it, it's a Western. It's a phenomenal neo-Western.
It is. It's very much so.
That's how you update a genre.
We'll talk about that later.
I think it's a brilliant film. I think it's almost going to fire just sitting here talking about it.
Yeah, I'm going to rewatch it. I can't wait.
Me too.
On to the twos.
Oh boy.
At number two. And don't worry, I'm counting on this to pull a last late minute scan on bingo.
Because everyone's going to have this one.
Green Room.
Oh!
We talked a bit about how films are films of the moment or 2016 films. My final two films are, in a nutshell, not the 2016 that we wanted, but the 2016 that we got. Green Room is just this fantastic exploration of how the American wilderness has become this terrible, festering place in which people do horrible and brutal things to one another.
Like vote for Donald Trump.
It's effectively a two-hour meditation.
I think a lot of people in that film vote for Trump. I think we could be pretty sure.
This is about a film about a group of neo-Nazis.
It's Nazis versus punks. But what I think it captures very...
It's true.
It is, and that's a very reductive synopsis, and it works very well in terms of as a survival horror on those terms. Yeah. What I think it does very well is it captures... It's not a sense of good versus evil, but it's a sense of evil versus apathy, which I think is very 2016, in that the punks are perfectly willing to take the money to perform for a bunch of neo-Nazis. And they're perfectly willing to have a little joke before they do the performance, but then give a serious performance and validate their night and take the money and run because they need it. And this sort of attitude of that is a cardinal sin.
Because it may kill them.
Because it ends up killing them. In the way that like horror films rely on this idea of trespass or this idea of like transgression. And I like the idea of Green Room presenting that as a moral transgression, as compromise with something like that, as a moral transgression of itself. Mm. It's also incredibly visceral. It's got a wonderful, wonderful cast. Late Anton Yelchin, Imogen Poots, and also Patrick Stewart, who is
as you've
novel.
Never seen him before.
But the part he was born to play, let's face it, if anybody was ever going to play a skinhead, Patrick Stewart was really your best option.
It has exceptional sound design and a soundtrack that's quite...
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not as hot on it as you, though. I basically...
Damn, there goes the bingo.
Sorry. Just as far as... Okay, it has some thematic weight, clearly. But I felt, in terms of the violence, I think it had been done before and done better and less insistently in Blue Room, his debut, which I liked more. Oh. And it had more Mick and Blair.
Oh, and
I'm kind of similar with Philip. I felt the first half of Green Room was one of the best ones I've seen this year. I think it's all set up, the payoff isn't quite strong enough to do it. I think the setup is great. Yeah. I think that the first 40, 50 minutes are aces. But it didn't sustain. It's similar to Blue Room, by the way, which I'm not as wild on. I think he's an interesting director, but I don't think he's made his film yet.
Next one is
the Yellow Submarine next.
Well, given the
Red Dawn.
No. Given,
that's his corporate phase.
Oh no. Given how much, given the violence, Blue Room and Green Room, next one's going to be Red Rum, surely.
White Ribbon, come on, surely.
Well, that's pretty.
But I think he's an interesting filmmaker and always worth watching. He plays around in that genre very well, and that's always somebody doing.
And we're talking about Mooney Family Movies. That is most likely going to be the St. Stephen's Day slot.
I think that works. Enjoy that, Mrs. Mooney.
Well, it's the alternative slot with the more freedom for programming. It's like the Babadook.
Care for that angle grinder?
Yeah. Well, don't stick your hand out the door for any neo-Nazis. All right, Phil.
Where's my box cutter?
Where's my box cutter?
Number two.
That country music hit.
My number two was number one on my list for a long, long time.
Oh, no.
Oh, Jane Ould. Yeah, it slipped just at the end, right at the tail end, but it's neck and neck, and this film I loved from the get-go. Louder Than Bombs. So, Gabriel Byrne, Jesse Eisenberg, and newcomer Devin Druid mourning Isabelle Huppert, as you would, because she's Isabelle Huppert. She's not dead, thankfully. Well, she is in the film, but she reappears frequently in flashbacks and so forth. But this is a beautifully measured study of grief and how we deal with it, or how we don't deal with it, more to the point. And
it has the second best performance from Jesse Eisenberg all year, behind Batman Superman.
You're funny.
I am.
It's actually, I think, one of Eisenberg's best performances.
I would agree.
Possibly his best, because he's played all these characters. You think you can pin them down, these three guys. It's Gabriel Byrne playing the patriarch of the family and his two sons.
Yes.
And Eisenberg's character has just become a father for the first time, and Druid is a high schooler. And you think you can fit them into certain roles, but they're all capable of, you know, out of their griefs, they're capable of certain transgressions, of certain mistakes, and of certain moments of nobility.
I think the film sets that up in the sense that it is the trope of the mother gone from the family.
Yeah, so
and the disintegration.
But it sort of plays with that so much. Yeah. Like, it gets at things that you wouldn't normally see in that kind of story.
And it starts with the structure, because it's very impressionistic. It's fragmented. There's back and forth.
And there's reasons
and forth
for that as well.
Absolutely.
In the context of what's happened.
Because it's generally how grief happens.
Well, yeah, that is. It's and just how memories are. And memories fade. Things
or
get
distorted.
Exactly. All that.
Yeah, but it's powerful. This is Joachim Trier, the director of Oslo, August 31st, which I still haven't watched. I'm sorry, Jay. Yeah, no. I will.
Do it's.
Oh, if it's any, if it's, it's supposed to be even better than this,
I would
can't
put it better.
But this
there's
is
not
great.
Much.
I mean, this is a film that turned a lot of people off. It didn't get great reviews.
It
Premier
did not. No, it got very sniffy reviews.
Yeah,
actually,
and
remember.
I don't.
So I lowered my expectations somewhat.
But
I'm a huge Trier fan.
I like that. What I found the past couple of years is when you have films that do very well at festivals as well, by the time they open in Ireland, and I think you talked about this as well. When
the
you
were, Sundance Factor, I tried to touch.
Yeah, or even, like, I think maybe Son of Saul was for you. You talked about another one as well. For me, it was, what was the one with the avalanche?
Force Majeure.
Where everybody had spent, by the time it was screened in
the
Ireland,
saturation
I'd been,
from it.
I'd been hearing
yeah,
for
yeah,
years
yeah,
that
yeah,
it was it was going to
yeah.
work for a year and a half, that it was brilliant
great,
and amazing.
I think
and it was
there's
great.
Something in it. No, I know you'd really like it too, but I take your point.
I really liked it, but I was expecting it to be like divine presence
being shot.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know?
This was, I was blown away. Absolutely blown away.
Yeah.
And I cannot recommend it. And again, and Isabelle Huppert this year for me, 3 for 3, because I've already seen Elle. Yeah.
Elle. It may make an appearance on my list.
Here's one for you, Phil. Elle or Eye Water?
I would watch the hell out of that. Trust me. It's
Jesus. That's pretty good.
Jay, what's your number two?
Number two has been mentioned before already.
Oh.
And that
it's Green Room.
It's not Green Room.
Uh-huh.
It's Rebecca Daly's Mammal.
Wow! Number two.
Number two, yeah. And to some degree, 2 to 5 could have been placed. It's relatively arbitrary in the sense that they're all around the same kind of level. The top number one is kind of on its own, but the next four are kind of all around the same level. So the numerical kind of pacing is largely irrelevant, but I thought Mammal was absolutely superb. And by some distance, in a great year for Irish film, and a really great year, the best Irish film I've seen this year, and one of the best films I've seen this year, clearly. It has great performance. I know you weren't too gone that beyond.
No, I love the performances.
Yeah,
I absolutely adore the performances.
It's just that
I
weird,
feel like I'm
strange
on people's
and odd kind of feeling, odd tone to a film.
Yeah.
That
which is something we don't really do in
Irish films. We don't.
Often.
This is
classic
kind of European
film.
Yeah,
it is very French. I think
classical European film. It definitely is. And I remember discussing that with Niall after. Yeah. It was like we'd seen it.
Yeah. I remember complaining about it while Rebecca Daly was sitting several rows behind me. that's my defining
it's
memory.
It's gone on made up for this side of the thing, anyway. So, but no, I was going to say, or anybody hasn't seen to watch it, but we can't because it's not there. But it's very, very good.
Cool. Niall.
My number two is, and I'm keeping it Irish as well, I'm going with Viva.
Which I haven't seen.
Paddy Brown.
Cuban set drag queen drama. It is.
When you lay it out like that, it doesn't sound like what you say, Paddy Brown, Irish director, Cuban set. drag queens. Yeah. Mad Libs, but I'm willing to go with this.
It's a coming of age story.
It has a lot of heart.
Yeah, for a young boy who's trying to find his place in the world. His father has abandoned him. His mother has died. His father then comes back into his life. He's struggling with his own sense of identity, and it's absolutely glorious to look at. Copper Wars shot is it uses primary colors brilliantly. Uses the tricolor brilliantly as well.
Is it set in Cuba, people?
It is set in Cuba, but it could have been set anywhere, really. It just so happens it feeds into the Cuban.
Well, I think the visual identity of it is very. It feels very Cuban.
It feels very Latin American.
Yeah, yeah, it has that sort of. And then you talk about the bright colors. I think that's. Yeah. Yeah, that's
and important. It's just a glorious tale. It's just. It's very well woven. It's very real, you know. And then when he does get to fulfill his destiny of becoming a drag queen and going out on stage and having the whole outfit and everything else, it's just a wonderful moment, and it's a joyous experience. And I saw that it was the closing film of Adif, and it was a very emotional and powerful experience. And I mean that. Yes, that coloured it. Well, I've seen it since, and it's still.
Well, I mean, it's worth pausing to note that, like, Adif's opening film was Sing Street, and his closing film was Viva. Yeah. That's a phenomenal year for Irish film, even discounting the Oscar nominations for stuff like Room.
And how close Viva was to getting the best foreign film. It was only top 7 or top 8, wasn't it?
It
just missed out on it. Best foreign film thing, which, I mean, that's a pretty strong year.
That is a great year for Irish film.
No, it's a wonderful film.
I'm looking forward to watching it, actually. Now that I have it, thank you, Lauren.
And on to number one.
Since we're all going to choose this one, I feel like, you know, I'll just mention it and we'll all just acknowledge it. Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight.
This is light and comes territory for me.
It's the film of 2016, whether you want it to be or not. It is the American...
I don't want it to be.
Sorry, Jay.
I mean, you're talking about...
We get the 2016 we deserve. But it is the American frontier reimagined as survival horror, recurring motif that plays through films like Bone Tomahawk and The Revenant. But in this case, it's a Western imagined as The Thing, right down to the use of Ennio Morricone's classic original score for the film. It's a bunch of people locked together in a cabin, hating one another. Old rivalries.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, and God bless us, everyone. But even stuff like well-observed lines like the discussion with Tim Roth about the nature of justice versus vengeance, Samuel Jackson's very pointed observation that the only time black folks are safe is when white folks are disarmed, the idea that the entire American experience is based upon a lie, the failure to come to terms with like the consequences of the Civil War in a country where stuff like the Confederate flag was flown above like government buildings until last year. It is a film about hatred and contempt and simmering anxiety at a point in time where all of those are just waiting to burst to the surface. This was released on January 8th, and now in December, it is a film that feels of the moment. It is a film that feels now. It is now encapsulated in 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Unfortunately, so does D.W. de Griffith's The Burnt Emanation.
Which is still better than
and
Nate
also
Parker's
The Burnt Emanation. But it's beautifully constructed. It's got that Tarantino script. It's got the sense of humor. It's got the bursts of violence. It's got this... I think Tarantino is a director who is willing to... For all the discussion that Tarantino generated as a filmmaker when he emerged for being nihilistic or amoral, Tarantino has a very strong moral center that runs through films like Inglourious Basterds and films like, for example, Django. Like, there's a real justifiable anger and hatred towards the system as it operates. And I think, and I know everybody on this podcast is staring at me now as if...
We're frankly terrified, Darren. We don't mind telling you this. You're very insistent here. I don't blame you. I mean, fine.
To be fair, let's put this in context. My past number one films include films like Cloud Atlas.
Okay.
All right. This is.
You're remarkably contrarian for a populist.
I really am. Given that my list to this point included stuff like Creed and 10 Cloverfield Lane, not to mention The Nice Guys.
You're allowed this, certainly. It's not a film I'm particularly fond of in that. It gets down to the nuts and bolts of it. It's far too locked. Tarantino really needs to learn how to, say more with less. I mean, it just feels excessive in a lot of ways. And yeah, okay, timely it may be, shockingly so. But drags and it goes on and it just, it takes forever to make a point that is made several times before the end.
I don't know, I think it earns that length, and I think that like building slowly to the bloodbath is the entire point. In the same way that, that Bone Tomahawk does, and we had a discussion about the length of Bone Tomahawk.
I think that's too long also.
Yeah, and it's about the similar length, but I think the length allows for the genre shift.
I think that's fine, right? But I want to get to where that is, right? I do not want to wait all this time to get there. I'm happy to wait a certain amount of time for something where you know it's building up to. But if you're going to do that, and here's my issue with Hateful Eight as well, and I'll say that as a Tarantino fan in the context of, I think he's one of the most interesting filmmakers America has.
He's
and
one of those people when he
way, bizarrely to Spike Lee, that when he bring out a new film,
it's always interesting.
It's always like he's a very interesting filmmaker. How he sees the world is very interesting. Yeah.
And I think he conveys that very well. I think
you're saying like he should say whatever and he should cut down. That's fine. He's never going to do it. He's done what he's done. You can either like it or not go to see it. That's Tarantino's way.
That's true.
He doesn't give a shit whether you like it. Yeah. I like it.
It's very much his vision.
It is.
Yeah. And it's uncompromising.
Whilst I'm more towards Philip than Darren, I really didn't like it. In my memory, I'm a little kinder to it than I was when I turned it off. Yeah. But what I will say about it is, there's something about a Tarantino film that something like Hateful Eight may well be 20 years from now seen in a lot better light than some films are seen
now. Maybe, it's quite possible.
Whatever about him, he knows what classic Hollywood cinema is. He knows.
Yeah. I mean, the use of 70mm here is astonishing.
That camera's shot into the sign at the start of the film.
It's one of
the best camera moves I've seen since Side Effects.
Which is probably the best thing anybody's ever said about Side Effects. But I do love Side Effects. Even stuff like I saw the was the 7mm, 35mm cut in the iFi?
Yes, it's 70mm.
Yeah, 70mm, sorry. And it's absolutely stunning and beautiful. It's well constructed in terms of, like, even when they're riding the carriage, the framing of the characters, which is different between the versions, where you have the literal barriers between Samuel Jackson and the survivors of the Confederate War. I think Tarantino
knows what he's filming.
Well, he knows what he's filming.
Absolutely. I would put myself in a curious position of almost defending a film I really didn't like. So I'm kind of maybe thinking about it more than.
I
didn't like it either.
I think I'm just approaching it from the basic issues that I've had with Tarantino for the last few films.
I think it
can feel indulgent. Now, maybe this one does have a bit more critical heft given the times we're in.
I think it has. But I think
whether it's appreciating time remains to be seen.
I think that's indulgent. I think Django's indulgent. Yeah. And weirdly, of the last three films that we're talking about, Inglourious Basterds, I think, is the smartest of the three for me.
Yeah.
Which has the greatest ending, probably, of a Tarantino which is extraordinary. Yeah. If you really think about it, American cinema, I think that's amazing.
Plot twist.
Yeah. It's got to be a plot twist.
It's powered by cinema, the same
cinema
angle.
Killed Hitler.
Hitler, yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's it. Like, Tarantino is very much aware of the fact he's making propaganda for his point of view.
Yeah.
And I think he's unapologetic about that.
And that's what's really interesting. Keith Tarantino, he doesn't care what you think.
Yeah.
He's going to make up whatever damn thing he likes.
But I think
he'll fit it barely within the confines of the genre.
And I think, as I said, it's 20, 30 years from now, when Tarantino's old or dead or whatever it'll be.
When he's done his 10 and retired.
I hope he sticks to it, because we won the feud that does. But not that I wouldn't want to see more, but if he says he's going to do it. It's a body of work that'll be discussed, it'll last. Like, I think it will last, even whilst I could bang my head off the wall with frustration or something.
And the thing is, he's a director who's already guaranteed his legacy with his first three films alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just...
I think he's a better filmmaker now than he was then. I think they're better films, probably.
But he's worse
script.
But that's a different issue. I think that's where my issues will come on.
Less tight film writer, I think. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think in terms of construction, he's maybe loosened a little bit. But I think at the same time he's more driven and more informed and more engaged with what he's writing.
It's an interesting choice there, and it's one that I will revisit. I think I'll need another year.
But
I will revisit it.
Do we need to go around the table, or will we just name it the best film of the year right
now?
What was your favourite film of the year?
Right, I expected a bit more blowback for your film, to be honest.
Oh, don't worry, we'll get to yours.
I'm expecting a bit for mine, because this is one that came in fairly late. But as soon as I saw it, I thought...
Rogue One!
Oh, I'm afraid of this now.
It's not Rogue
One. Oh, God, I'm afraid. I'm massively afraid of this.
It's Patterson.
Wow, okay.
God fucking damn it, Philip.
I love 2016.
You gave up Leonard of for this?
Yeah.
I love 2016.
Oh god, this is going to be good.
Patterson is a... This is, of course, Jim Jarmusch's latest. And I felt something throughout this entire film that... You know, I was talking earlier about how Everybody Wants Some made me smile like I hadn't on a long time. This gave me something that I cannot remember the last time I felt something. And it's peace. This is a film that is all about peace. This is Adam Driver's character, who's living in Paterson, New Jersey, and he is existing, and he is living his life. And as idealistic as it might be, and as occasionally twee as it might get, I fell in
Jay is
loving.
For
yes,
this
Jay is not, because I know Jay is not a fan of Paris, and hence my prediction of blowback. But
I'm pretty sure what Jay thinks it's a piece of is done.
No, no, I'm not going ever.
I
should get the same Jay. Letter as Serenity.
But it just, like, as most drama films do, it goes at its own pace. It goes at its own click, its own way. Like this, it's about a guy who drives a bus, enjoys his time with his wife, his friends, and he writes poetry. And that is more or less it over the course of a week. And the thing is, even when you get into those rhythms, you don't mind the occasional overlaps in his schedule or his habits.
That's part of it. Like, it's part of the thing.
Yeah, it's just... It's just a sublimely calm film. I needed that more than anything from cinema this year.
Perhaps that's more about you, though, than the film.
Maybe, but I think this is something that cinema needs as well right now.
I think it's something rare in cinema.
It's very rare.
Certainly in American cinema.
I would endorse that. Like,
yeah, and I cannot recall a film that delivered it so pitch perfectly. It is wonderfully shot, beautifully acted. Adam Driver gives one of the best performances of the year.
Driver's impressed quite a lot, maybe.
Driver is great.
Yeah.
And he's great in this.
Yeah.
I have no issue with Driver. He's very, very
good. Would you go so far as to say he's a driving force?
I would exactly go say this.
Driver plays a driver in this, you know.
Driver plays a driver named Patterson in Patterson. It's quite meta. That
this is the thing. I know that Patterson would get on people's nerves for that kind of reason. That's about as clever as it gets.
Yeah.
But, again, it's just something that we don't see enough of in cinema. It's slim on narrative, but it doesn't matter because you get sucked into this existence. A kind of bliss.
You're not wrong in what you say.
I know that.
Right,
I feel like Jay is cushioning this.
Yeah, come on. Why does it? I know it's
the first 45 minutes to an hour. I was for the most part with this. I like the rhythm of it. I think it was ended that way to give it that day feeling where you just kind of coast along, really nice day to day. And that's fine, right? But at some point, and I'm trying to remember the exact point, and it'll come to me, probably won't come to me in this podcast, goddammit, but it will, where I went, no. Right? And at one point, the kind of twee quirkiness of it overwhelmed the kind of casual flow of it. And I'm not going to get into specifics, because, I mean, not everybody has seen it, whatever, but it's to do with black and white motifs and exhausting, silly kind of asides that just got really tiresome really quickly.
But I didn't mind that, because...
I didn't until I did.
Well, I didn't, I feel, and again, this is all personal,
yeah,
as these things are, but... It wove these things into these characters' rhythms and routines so well that I didn't feel like that they were quirks just for the sake of being quirks.
I think they started to overwhelm it at a certain point, and I think there was a couple of narrative choices then made with the story, which again I don't really want to get into specifics about, but a couple of things happen towards the end of the film.
I know what you mean.
And that really fucking irked me and pulled me away from the film that had the potential to be really good and that I was really enjoying, certainly for a good chunk of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you rewatch that 6 months or a year from now, how much you'll feel it's the same, or maybe I'll enjoy it a bit better, or whichever way it'll be. But I just, by the end of it, I was like, no, just stop. Just stop it, Jarmusch. Just stop it.
I could have watched another hour easily.
Oh, I couldn't.
So, Phil, are you the only Jarmusch lover left alive?
Possibly. Nice.
Very nice.
Nice.
Very nice.
That was my number one film of that year as well.
I really liked it as well, actually.
And I mean, while I'm probably the way I talk about it, it does sound personal. I think there's a lot of people who get a lot of
it. I'm not arguing with that, but I'm saying you are coming from it from that perspective very much so.
I am, but I think it is just doing something as a film that not enough films do.
A lot of people love it. Like,
and I think there's an argument to make that that's a valid version of 2016 to defend.
Yeah.
And given the 2016 that we've had, what kind of year has it been to get our Sorkin on there?
Oh, please don't.
Yeah,
I'm just happy Hateful Eight got an easy rush.
See what I mean?
Jason?
Louder Bumps, Philip's already mentioned it. I'm a huge Open Trier fan, and it was always got. Once I saw it, I would be amazed if anything.
It was there right up until.
I thought it was phenomenal. Yeah. I think it is phenomenal. I think it's just. It's beautiful, it's messy, it's seismic in its. It's the smallest of story, and literally for what it explodes everywhere.
Huge
because emotional ripples across everything.
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved it. And it's a film that I'll watch again and again, I imagine. And as a filmmaker, he is just fantastic. And I read that it's a Norwegian genre thriller is his next film.
Can't wait.
And I'm like, I'll watch anything this guy makes because he is. And I kind of, maybe it's sad in some ways that he's retreating away from maybe the English language film because the kind of, it didn't quite hit for him. But I don't care because his first two films are glorious.
I don't
anyway.
Care. I'm just glad Gabriel Byrne was back. Best
That face. They're all great. The whole cast is great.
Yeah.
The young guy, particularly, that doing
Devin
very, Drew. Very good.
Who we gave a shout out to on Twitter and he thanked us very much. He's very polite.
Thanks to the A's, right? But I absolutely adored it. And I mean, we've already said it from when you have number two. It's as good a film as I've seen in the last couple of years, like in terms of it's right up there.
Mm.
Like it's proper emotional filmmaking and storytelling. Loved it. Absolutely loved it.
So my number one, and we're sticking with a recurring theme from my list, and we're keeping it close to home, it is A Day for Mad Mary.
Oh, hello.
It absolutely floored me. Absolutely destroyed me when I saw it. It's an incredible piece of work. For a debut feature, it is.
I would agree.
It's got a beautiful use of, because I don't tend to come back to this thing, but of artificial light as well, and nighttime in particular.
And the setting being an unusual setting in the sense of
small Irish town in Dundalk. You have, and I'm from a small country town, so the claustrophobic nature of that, and the difficulty
everybody
of escaping,
stuff,
and everybody knowing everything about you, it all hit home. Quite a bit, and it's just that central performance is glorious.
It's terrifying at that moment. In moments, it's delicate in other moments. It's vulnerable and emotional in others. It's just
and
wonderful.
It's peeling back layers of an onion all the time because she comes into it with a front up,
and it's a classic trope of a character. You know, just this and now, but it's nowhere. It's not even about that, and it goes. It does peel back very, very much,
and it's never. It's never explicitly said what she did.
Well, you know.
You know
she's fresh out of prison.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she's coming back home, and she's has to be bridesmaid for her best friend. But it turns out that in the interim, her best friend has moved on, and it's all about relationships breaking down and being redefined and reformed, and how you fit back into a comfortable life that you had before when. That has changed.
And probably can't.
And it does it so well, the film. Like, it's the fluidity of it. Like, it's just, it's a wonderful film.
And then finding new relationships and all
and
the
finding what those relationships are as well, which is I love
it. It's a wonderful piece of narrative fiction. And it has that great central performance, but it has great support as well. It's got pathos, it's got humour, it's got.
It's based on a play as well. It doesn't feel at all
stagey. No, that's in the conflict of respect.
And especially with budget, like, because obviously you generally like you need a bigger budget to kind of escape those confines. And this doesn't feel that.
Well,
at
it
all.
Completely rewrote the play. The whole central thesis of it, the A Day for Mad Mary, is not the driving force of it, which is so. While she that is what something that she's looking for, she's also looking for her own way of life within her, what used to be her life.
Yeah.
And it's about that. It's about the rediscovering of who you are once something fundamental to who you are has changed.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's a terrific film.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrific. Just missed out on my top five at number six, but I loved it.
Excellent. So that would mean that the consensus is, well, Hell or High Water is...
without getting too spoilery.
Yeah.
We had a little bet beforehand to see how many films would appear in the 40 films that we would list.
Yeah.
2016 being the divisive year that it has been, we hit 30, which I think was Phil's.
Yeah.
So, what's my prize?
You can have Cadbury's mini roll.
Yay!
Enjoy.
I'd have settled for your respect.
Other
okay.
Grams of confectionery are available.
we can work on a swap. So in terms of films that appeared more than once, there are only seven of them, films that duplicated across okay. the rows. So counting backwards from the bottom, Mammal, which appeared on both Niall's list and Jay's list with 10 points. It was second for Jay and last 10th for Niall. We have joint fifth, we have Son of Saul and Creed, which split evenly across the table. Niall and Phil going for Son of Saul, and myself and Jay going for Creed.
Ever the populist turn.
We just can't
it's
help
all
it.
So much well,
yeah. I think that tells how the podcast
just
breaks
think
down.
Think about that sentence. Creed and Son of Saul.
Joint fifth best
I
film
feel like
of the
growing
year.
As a person.
This is 2016 in a nutshell, people.
Yeah.
At number four, we had A Date for Mad Mary, which came in at the top of Niles and halfway down Jay's. At number three, we had Anomalisa, which was the only film to appear on three lists.
Oh, yeah. And it was 12 on mine, so it was very, very close.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And at number two, then, we have Louder at Bonds, because it placed so high on Jay and Phil's lists. It placed second on Phil's and number one at Jay's.
Much to Jay's chagrin.
Yeah. Alas, you could have had the perfect 20. And then finally, at the very top, we have Hell or High Water, the only poker of the...
I think that's a worthy...
Is it worthy?
I don't think anybody would argue that.
No.
A rare consensus at the end of a fraught 2016.
Really,
God, something is...
Hold on, 2017.
Everyone knows it can only be better.
New James Bond film.
Hey.
New Martin Scorsese film.
We've seen it.
We have seen it.
But more on that next year.
will it appear in 2017 still?
Spoiler alert.
No,
it won't. I'm sorry, aww. Marty. It makes me sad.
It does make Jay sad.
It really makes
like
me sad.
But,
it's been
emotional.
It has been emotional.
It's been an exhausting area. It's been great to do this, actually.
No, I've been really enjoying
it. I really enjoyed it, guys.
Will there be more Scum on podcasts? Well, who
wait
knows?
Wait for the next podcast to find out.
Hashtag save the Scum on.
I certainly hope so.
I would be open to doing this
me
more
too.
Regularly.
You might be open to it. Oh, good. Go
there. Contract negotiations. Don't stop.
People, yeah.
I'll get my people to call you over here.
Thanks.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Amen to that.
Yes.
Thanks very much, guys. See you in 2017.
Bye.